地獄に変えた迷路の選手たち。
Hello and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack
and Sean Chapman.
We are here to talk about stuff this week on the show, continuing a theme from last week where we are getting ready for next week's premiere of Dragon Ball Super Broly here in the United States. We are taking a look back on the two parts of that title, Dragon Ball Super, the television show we talked about last week.
Yes.
It's very fun to get to talk about a show we really liked.
Yes.
And this week we are talking about Broly, namely the character who starred in three of the original Dragon Ball Z theatrical animated films, and we will be reviewing all of those today because, Sean, you and I, over the last couple days, have watched the three movies together.
Yes, we have.
On the nice new Blu-ray restorations straight from Japan.
Yes.
So straight from Japan they don't even have subtitles, which you don't really need.
Yes, you don't really need it. It kind of makes it easier to just not pay attention to some of the exposition when it starts going on too long.
I am enjoying them more this way.
Yeah.
But we will get into all of that. We are talking about Broly today, something that I don't know if we ever really thought we'd have a topic on, and then they went and decided, like, we're going to make a new Broly movie and try to make it good.
Yeah, and so Here we are, Jonathan.
Here we are. So, yeah, we are pre-recording this. We're recording this about 2 weeks before this episode is actually coming out, because this is the last one we're recording together back here in Colorado before I head back to Iowa for the next semester of my school program, and you'll be doing, you know, adult stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing a lot of adult stuff.
Okay, well, that got weird.
Take that how you want.
All right, so yeah, so this will be another, you know, Dragon Ball heavy episode. I don't know if we have anything else to talk about. It's only been 2 days since we recorded the last podcast.
Yeah.
Spoilers, just that's how the sausage is getting made right now. So is there any other topic we want to get into before we just dive into more Dragon Ball goodness?
I don't think so, Jonathan.
I think we just need to get this off our chests.
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay. So let's get into this, Sean. If you're not familiar with the Dragon Ball Z movies, let's get into this, because I think there's probably a good generation of fans now who know Dragon Ball, like Dragon Ball, but might actually not have familiarity with the movies, and I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Because the way the movies worked is, so there were 17 theatrical movies in total made in, like, the original run of the TV series between Dragon Ball Z and then GT, and 13 of those are the Dragon Ball Z movies. And the way these were made is they would come out twice a year, once in March and once in July, throughout the run of Dragon Ball Z. And they would come out at the Toei Animation Fair on the Blu-rays that I have now. There's little previews for them where Masako Nozawa yells, you know, Toei Animation Fair! And it's really fun. And what they would be is they were basically part of a festival Toei would put on, and then it would tour around Japan. And the movies are like 45 to 50 minutes long. In the case of the first Broly movie, inexplicably 75 minutes long.
Yeah.
We'll get into that later. And you would watch them. You would not go to the theater and just pay for one 45-minute movie. They weren't completely ripping you off. It would be part of a double or triple feature with other anime movies. So, like, you might have, I know in the early days there were various, like, Dr. Slump movies would also be on the bill with the Dragon Ball films. Or you might have other just popular properties at the time. I couldn't find the exact list of which ones the Broly movies played with, but it's just, you know, an anime that was airing at the time. Some of them are very obscure to us now. Some of them you would recognize, and you would go to a theater and you'd get to watch a couple of fun anime movies, and that's how they would come out. I think to us though, Sean, the Dragon Ball movies are such a weird thing because, you know, we came up with Dragon Ball in the late 90s, early 2000s. And back then, the way you watched Dragon Ball is there were none of these, like, nice box sets.
No.
With, like, 30 to 40 episodes. And you couldn't go stream them online or anything like that. It was either you caught them on Cartoon Network, dubbed and usually edited in that case.
Yes.
Or you would get a home video release. So VHS tapes or DVDs, which would have 3 episodes, maybe 4 if you were lucky. So you weren't collecting Dragon Ball that way. Unless you were a rich kid. You were, you know, like, I had a couple of the DVD volumes, and I watched those episodes over and over again, but I by no means owned a collection until they started putting out bigger box sets.
Yeah, same with me.
Yeah, until, like, that was, like, 2007, I think, is when they did the first Orange Brick set here, which was not a great release, but it was the first time you could get a good chunk of the series for cheap.
Yeah.
So that was nice. But what that meant, though, is that it was actually, the movies were much more easily digestible, because you could just get a DVD DVD of the movie, or you could rent it at Blockbuster or something. I totally remember this cover. I'm holding the first Broly movie here. Broly, the legendary Super Saiyan. And I just remember this cover at my local Blockbuster. And I definitely rented it once or twice before I, you know, owned it at some point. And it was fun because you could get, it's like, oh, the movies aren't the best thing, but you can get one movie, and it's like, well, there you go. I feel like I own a part of the series or something.
It's not just like, here's, you know, because Dragon Ball Z, the anime, is not, you know, it's heavily serialized, so it's hard to find a chunk of 3 to 4 episodes that is satisfying in unto itself.
Yes.
You know, you'd be very lucky if you found something that's like, this is an okay chunk of, it'd usually be like, oh, here's like, we're starting in the middle of some fight, and then we're ending in the middle of another fight that I don't get to see the conclusion of, and goddamn it.
Yeah, or more frequently, you're just in the middle of a fight with no beginning or end.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And, yeah, I mean, this is even kind of how it worked in Japan, because in Japan, the TV series never had any kind of home video release until DVD, and they did the Dragon Box releases and then single discs out of that. But the movies did come out on VHS and Laserdisc, and you might own those. So it's the same kind of thing. Like, and they are little, you know, digestible 45 to 50 minute chunks of like, let's just have some Dragon Ball fun. I think we should just talk before we get into the Broly movies about the movies in general.
Yeah.
Because they're a really weird beast in that they're not great.
No, yes. Generally speaking, they are not particularly amazing.
And they're, you know, they are a for fans only affair, you know? I'm not out there recommending, like, the old Dragon Ball movies to just, like, you know, someone tells me, like, you know, I'm really into Bresson. And I'm like, well, you know what? You should watch Dragon Ball Z, Return My Gohan.
Yeah.
The one with Garlic Jr. That one's great. No. They're really for fans. But I think if you're a fan of the series, at their best, what I really like about the movies is obviously they were produced for theaters. They had much higher animation budgets. They had more time to work on them. So you would get some really nice visuals. Sometimes they would get really adventurous and do all sorts of different settings. Like you and I were, because it shares a disc with Bio Broly, the third Broly movie, we were watching a scene from movie 12, which is Fusion Reborn.
Yeah.
And like there's just crazy surreal visuals in that one of all the stuff that goes on in the afterlife. And that's just so fun to look at. Or in the first DBZ movie, Garlic Jr.'s castle looks like something out of the Night on Bald Mountain sequence from Fantasia. Mm-hmm. You get just cool things like that. The first Cooler movie has a really great set piece that's all at sunset, and it just looks really beautiful. So you might get some really nice animation. At their best, you get some really cool fight choreography. And then the other big thing for me is that you get the music, because the composer for Dragon Ball Z, Shunsuke Kikuchi, obviously was not composing new music every week for Dragon Ball. That would be impossible and self-defeating. But where you would get big infusions of new music is in the movies. He would write a new original score for the movies, and then that score would be carried back over to the TV show. So a lot of your favorite pieces might have originated somewhere in the movies. Like, one of the best examples of this is everyone knows the piece in Dragon Ball Z when Piccolo dies defending Gohan in the Saiyan arc, and it plays that big choral theme. That is the villain theme from the second Dragon Ball movie, Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle, with Lucifer, who is basically a Dracula figure, and that's his, like, theme as he's, like, you know, opening up the heavens for demons to come out. And it's, like, really weird when you go back and watch that movie now, and you're like, why is it playing the Piccolo dying music? It's like, oh, no, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of things like that. So, again, at their best, I think the movies can do some really cool things and just have a, you know, short, compact burst of Dragon Ball fun. But on the flip side...
Yeah, because it is, what I do appreciate, then, like you said, is the animation can be really good. That's not true of all of them. Some of them have, like, the second Cooler movie in particular has some not great animation in it, which is, not good, especially if you get the DVD for that one. And then I think I mentioned this on a podcast several weeks ago. We were sort of talking about eventually we would do this podcast. One of the things I appreciate it about them, though it is also one of the faults of them, is that they tend to repeat whatever the most recent trend was in Dragon Ball Z and, like, the normal anime. So it's, like, right around when they finish doing the Frieza stuff, that's when you get the Cooler movie, which Cooler is Frieza's brother, and he shows up on Earth, and Goku and Cooler fight, and at the end of the movie, Goku goes Super Saiyan and defeats Cooler, kind of in a similar way to Goku becoming Super Saiyan and defeating Frieza, only it's in the span of 40 minutes instead of, like, 40 hours, whatever it is, you know, or you get, like, the Super Android 13 movie wherein the villain is an android that absorbs two other androids to become way more powerful at the end.
My favorite example of this And it's one where I think it works to the film's advantage, because sometimes this can be a fun way to, like, see a different view on something from the show.
Yeah.
Is in movie 9, which is called over here BoJack Unbound, I think.
Yes.
But it's the BoJack movie, which now just makes me think of BoJack Horseman. But anyway, but it's a movie with a villain named BoJack. And at the end of the movie, Gohan goes Super Saiyan 2. And it's, you know, it's fairly similar to what happens with Cell, but that's, in the show, you only get to see Gohan go Super Saiyan 2 once.
Yes.
And it's that, and it's really cool, and Super Saiyan 2 Gohan is a fun character, but in the movie, you get to see him do it again with a different set of villains. And in this case, he just punches a fucking hole through BoJack's chest. I forget about that every time. Yeah. He doesn't do that to Cell. Doesn't punch a hole through Cell's chest. So, you know, that's an advantage. And so you get movies like that where I think it's really fun to see the remix. But then you'll get something like Lord Slug, movie 4, which is just the Piccolo Daimao arc from Dragon Ball, but done much more crappy. Plus, you get a weird thing where Goku talks about how he's becoming a Super Saiyan, but they didn't know what a Super Saiyan was when they made the movie, so he just gets like... he just gets a little stronger, and it's very, very strange.
Yeah, so it's the thing about these movies is that there's this like really delicate balance between like wanting the fan service of, I want to see Super Saiyan 3 Goku have a cool fight, because Super Saiyan 3 Goku only fights twice in the show, like one time with Majin Buu and one time with Kid Buu. And that first time with Majin Buu is very brief and doesn't have like an ending to that fight, really just kind of stops. And so that's satisfying and cool to see, like, oh, here's this form of this character, or, like, I want to see more Kaioken stuff. You can watch one of the earlier movies where Kaioken was still relevant, or Spirit Bomb, or whatever. Like, there is something satisfying about being able to see, as you said, some of these things that you really like from the show, and having them be done with really high-quality animation in a really bite-sized format, so you don't have to watch, you know, several hours of build-up to that moment in the anime. And it gives you this slightly different perspective on it. But then the downside to that is that oftentimes the movies just feel like they can feel at their worst creatively bankrupt in this way of like, it is so just mimicking whatever was the most recent trend in the anime, and there's not a lot of new material to interest you, and sometimes the villains and like the henchmen characters can be so formulaic that especially if you are watching several of the movies in a row, it is destructive. The best way to watch these movies is just when you're like, you know what, I really want a shot of Dragon Ball. Like, I just want some Dragon Ball something right now. You put in one of the movies and watch them, and then that's it, and you go on with your life. If you're like, I'm doing this whole big Dragon Ball watch-through kind of thing or something like that, and you're watching a bunch of movies in close proximity to each other, the faults of them become so incredibly apparent that it's hard to overlook them.
Yeah, and we should say also, with the modern movies like Battle of Gods, Resurrection F, and now the new Broly movie, those all proudly proclaim on the poster, you know, from Akira Toriyama, because he either just directly wrote the script or was, you know, very instrumental in writing the script, as in the case of Battle of Gods. Or even Super, he did not write Super, but he wrote detailed plot outlines, and he helped, like, shepherd it along. He had pretty much nothing to do with the movies, because he was busy enough writing the fucking manga.
Yeah.
You know, on the TV series side, he might contribute some character designs here and there. For the movies, same kind of thing, he might... usually it would be whoever was doing the character designs at the time, Minoru Maeda, Tadayoshi Yamamuro, Nakatsuru, I don't think, worked on the movies. But anyway, it was usually, in this half of the series, it's Tadayoshi Yamamuro. They might, like, design the character and then run it by Toriyama, and he might, like, make a couple changes, like, change that, change that, like, that's what they did with the Bardock special. He did not design the character Bardock, but like he took the design that I think that's a Maeda design and then like fixed it up a little bit. And he might do that with the movies. I don't think he was involved in these, from what I can tell. Like,
he definitely was not involved in Bio Broly. I can basically confirm that just by fucking looking at it.
Yeah. I could see if he touched up the original Broly or Paragus design or something, because those look pretty... Toriyama would never draw a character like Broly, I don't think, but I could see the touch-up being there, but yeah. So, again, the author of the series, not heavily involved in these. They were all written by a guy named Takao Koyama, who was the lead writer on the anime. And, you know, Takao Koyama, talented, I think, at adapting the story into the new format. Not so talented when you're just writing a all-new story. Like, he's good at some of the moments of fan service and jokes, because these movies are consistently pretty funny. I like that about them. But, like... the characters sometimes feel really off. We're going to talk about that with a certain thing with Vegeta later. We don't get to talk about with the Broly movies the way Goku is mischaracterized in the movies a lot of the time, because Goku is often really framed more as a, like, Superman figure in the movies who, like, is very righteous, and he's, like, has a righteous fury at the villains, and he's fighting for justice, and that's not really who Goku is. Like, there's a fine line, but that's not really it. And, yeah, so,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of the movies in a nutshell. There are good ones, there are bad ones. Where would you put the Broly trilogy, I guess we'll call it? On which side of that line do they fall for you?
It's near the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. All three of these, I think, are very dull.
Yeah.
The first one is incredibly long. The second one just doesn't have... There's not much to it. It's like the second one is this probably the second most thin of these movies in a way, because Bio Broly is the thinnest of the movies. Bio Broly just feels like it came from something else, and they just had to slap Dragon Ball into it, like, haphazardly. It'd be like, well, fuck, here's these, like, clone warriors with this biofluid that dissolves shit, and let's just put Goten and Trunks and Android 18 into it, because, fuck it. They just don't have... They don't have the fight choreography, they don't have the, like, sort of iconic Dragon Ball moment that they're mimicking, which is one thing that is nice about these movies, that they are some of the most original Dragon Ball movies. Like, they're not as... It's not like the Wrath of Dragon, the 13th one, the last of the original run, that is very original, but is also very interesting in how it's original. These are like, they're original, but there's not a lot to them.
Yeah.
If you dig into it.
It's weird. I definitely agree. These are on the lower end for me. I think the first one's definitely the best. It feels like the most complete version of what it's trying to be, even if it is absolutely overlong. It at least attempts to tell a story more than the other two. It has more moments I like. It's got the best animation of the three.
Yes, that's definitely true.
And the best music for me. That's, although all of them have good music, that's never bad in these. Yeah, we'll get into the quality of the individual movies later. But I think it is interesting, we're talking about the Broly movies, and I think it is relevant to go into the new movie with this as a basis, because there's a reason that Broly is popular enough to come back in this way all these years later, and I think we've got to try to figure out why. I don't know if we'll have answers for you, but we're going to try to figure it out. But as we talk about them, it's weird, like, this is the episode where we're talking about Dragon Ball movies. The Dragon Ball movies aren't great. These are not representative of Dragon Ball movies, generally speaking.
No, yeah, they are outliers.
Yeah.
And they're, it's like... And again, some of it, it's like you have to kind of give them credit for trying to do original stuff compared to the movies that are not really trying to do original stuff, like the Fusion movie. There's a lot of the Majin Buu saga is in Fusion Reborn, but goddamn, that movie is way more entertaining. And,
yes.
And it's a thing of, like, if you're looking at these movies as, like, you know, and some sort of, like, objective, like you said, for, like, the first Broly movie, it's the most complete version of, like, what one of these movies is trying to be. That is definitely true. But if you're just looking at it as, I don't care about, like, that, I just care about how much is my, like, monkey sane brain entertained by the Dragon Ball
yes-ness
of the movie, these are all, like, near the bottom.
Easily for me. They, you know, I was making a list of possibly, and I'll share this later, because I think we'll need to end on an up note, and we'll talk about better DBZ movies for a little bit. And I was trying to figure out what would my top 5 or 10 be, and Broly would not be anywhere in that zone. If I were ranking all 17, they would be near the bottom. So yes, but let's go ahead and get into it. I mean, because here's the question, and I guess there's some more context to lay down here, Sean, which is Broly, somewhat inexplicably to a lot of people, including you and I, is a super popular Dragon Ball character.
They made 3 of these movies. There's
yes.
only one other movie character that got another movie, which is Cooler.
Yes.
He had 2.
And even then, Cooler in the second one is so different. It's like...
Yeah. And even there, that's, again, where they sort of copy something that was happened in the anime.
Yeah.
That's where they get, you know, Frieza dies, comes back as Robo Frieza. Cooler dies, comes back as Robo Cooler. So
yes.
there's an excuse to bring Cooler back.
But Broly is big, and this is another thing that if you are a younger person, newer Dragon Ball fan, might be truly inexplicable to you. But if you were around in the day in the early 2000s, you know, and I imagine this is true of Japanese fans in the mid-90s, Broly was everywhere. Like,
yeah.
I just remember going into, like, you know, there was a time when there were, like, stores in the mall you would go to, like an FYE or something, or, like, Hot Topic in the day would have this, and there would just be all this Dragon Ball merchandise everywhere and posters and stuff, and Broly was slapped on everything.
Yeah, and it would be the kind of thing that if they went to using a movie character in a video game, Broly would always be the first one.
Yep.
And oftentimes, Broly would be the only movie character in a video game.
Yeah, so Broly is, you know, he was all over, like, the fandom at the time. Like, Funimation pushed him really hard. Because that's another thing to talk about is Funimation, how they sold the movies back in the day. Because they really, for the movies, tried to punch them up and make them seem more exciting.
They got, like, heavy metal crap songs in them during the fights and stuff. Yeah.
Yes, Broly, the DVD I have would be the version that has the heavy metal music under the fights. And it is so fucking bad, but it's also hilarious because it's like, it is such a time capsule. I'm actually very glad I own the original DVDs because I don't know if they even put those out anymore. Like, there must be licensing issues with their weird metal cover music. But yeah, like, it's a very bizarre thing. But Broly really fit with the aesthetic Funimation wanted to try to push for Dragon Ball with, like, this is a hardcore, big buff guys fighting. You know, remember, this is the same time where they, you know, promoted Dragon Ball GT, possibly the silliest Dragon Ball show, with that heavy metal rap song, you know.
Right, yeah.
Step into the Grand Tour, Grand Tour, Grand Tour.
Oh, God, putting it over what is, like, one of my favorite Dragon Ball OPs, which is the... Dun Dun Koko, Tadeteku. Jesus Christ.
I know.
Fucking GT song.
And do you remember, like, the Dragon Ball GT logo in Japan is just a very nice little animated logo, and it's fun. And in America, it was like this... It was metallic and, like, grizzled and all this stuff. Yeah. So Broly really fit into that whole aesthetic for them, and I think they pushed him pretty hard because of that. And then you would actually get home and watch the movie, and you'd be like... I don't know if this is really what they were selling.
Yeah, Master Roshi spends the entire movie drunk off his ass.
Yes. So, that was a whole thing. But yeah, Broly was popular. He still is popular. He's one of the characters in the DLC for Fighters. You know, Cooler got in there, but they didn't advertise the Cooler DLC. They advertised the Broly DLC.
Yeah, Broly came first of the non-canonical characters or whatever. He was the first in there. Cooler was in the last pack.
Yeah, you've always got to have Broly in there. You've always got to, you know, put him on the posters and shit. Broly is a big deal, even though he is not in... Obviously, any of the original, like, you know, quote-unquote canonical material for the story, he's not a Toriyama creation. And I think to a lot of Dragon Ball fans, myself included, Broly is fairly antithetical to the entire idea of what Dragon Ball characters and villains are.
Yeah, and to reiterate just how prominent he is in the Dragon Ball Legends mobile game that you can play on your phone, that it was one of my honorable mentions in our end-of-year podcast, he was one of the characters when the game launched, one of like the five or six of the highest rarity characters. Now there's like 30-something. But he at launch, there was like Super Saiyan Goku from the end of the Frieza fight. There's Broly, and there's like a Saiyan Saga era Vegeta. There was a handful of them. The legendary Super Saiyan Broly from these movies was one of the characters that they launched that game with.
Yeah, he is just really prominent in the fandom. You kind of know Broly to the degree where I think outside of the fandom, Broly is weirdly this thing that I think people would point to as like, oh yeah, that's what Dragon Ball is, right? He's like the big buff Broly dude punching people up. And he's not. And I guess that's where I want to start is before we get into any of the individual movies even is like, the character Broly matters so much more than the individual movies.
Mm-hmm.
What is Broly as a character? Why do you think he is as popular as he is? And then my point that I want to get into is why is he so antithetical to what I kind of think Dragon Ball is and should be?
I think he represents a like mindset around specifically Dragon Ball Z. And there's that... And I know that the character is popular in his own way in Japan, and I'm not going to pretend to try to speak to that because I have no idea. But I definitely can try to speak to his popularity over here in the like American community, especially with like the dub stuff, because he does lean into that version of Dragon Ball Z that some people wanted and saw in the show, which was the big ridiculous fights with like the, you know, Goku's all muscled up and gets his like gi gets ripped off and he's got like scars and like blood dripping down out of his mouth and stuff and coughing up blood while he's fighting Frieza, and it's like big crazy epic violent space action bullshit with lasers and all of that, and that's what people see Dragon Ball Z as being. And it's hard for me to blame, you know, the English dub-watching audience that I was a part of as a kid, even though, even at that age, I much more latched onto the character and the humor in Dragon Ball Z, and this is why when they started airing original Dragon Ball, I love that so much. But there's a lot of Dragon Ball Z fans that only saw that kind of Toonami version of Dragon Ball Z, never ventured outside into original Dragon Ball, never tried the Japanese version, or if they did, they bounced off immediately and didn't, you know, try to take to it. You know, they love the fucking Bruce Falconer music from the original dub, all of that kind of stuff. And Broly is so of a piece with that aesthetic that it makes so much sense to me from, like, an English dub Toonami era thing, why people would have liked Broly that much, even if he, as you said, he is, I think, like, starkly antithetical to the, like, heart and character and humor of Dragon Ball Z. It's one of the things that's, like, so strange about his first movie is that there is all this comic relief with Master Roshi and Oolong and Krillin that feels really out of place next to big buff guy screaming, Kakaroto!
But also all that comic relief stuff feels the truest to what Dragon Ball is.
It feels the truest to what Dragon Ball is, but it being, you know, put next to and juxtaposed with this other extreme of Dragon Ball, which is like the big, you know, it's like what now in Dragon Ball Z is carried on by the weird Dragon Ball Heroes card games and those kinds of things in Japan where you get the, here's Super Saiyan 4 Broly, here's Super Saiyan 3 Trunks, like here's the, like, you know, yeah. Super Saiyan 5 Gohan fused with Goten, like all of like the sort of like fan thing that kind of GT came out of. Broly feels like one of those things that, you know, like, the reasons why I don't like Broly are basically many of the same reasons why I don't like GT and don't like that side of Dragon Ball, but I do like Super, is because it is way more about the character dynamics and about the humor and the fighting and the action comes from that. And these characters in Broly as a character has never grasped that because he's, as a character, is wafer thin, has nothing interesting to him. As a villain, there's no compelling dynamic having him be opposite Goku or Vegeta or any of the other characters as opposed to Frieza or Cell or Boo that are interesting and have layers to them and bring out different sides of the characters that you like. Broly has nothing like that to him.
Yeah, and I think you did a good job there summarizing the, like, English dub perspective on this and why he was such a major presence in that community for a long time.
Yeah.
And still sort of does linger in that. You know, it's part of the reason why I think the new movie is going to be such a hit over here isn't just all the Dragon Ball Super resurgence stuff. It is the word Broly's in the title. They know they didn't need any other words in the title. It's there for a reason, you know? But I do think it speaks to something that is obviously there in the Japanese fandom as well. And in the original Japanese creation, or I should say adaptation of the series, which is this, I think, fundamental misunderstanding on the power ladder idea versus something more integral to the characters. Like, there's a really interesting quote I want to read. So Takao Koyama, as I mentioned, was the he was the main writer for the theatrical DBZ films, as well as the quote-unquote series organizer for the Dragon Ball Z TV series. So very familiar with the franchise, right? This is Koyama in 2013 wrote a post on his blog about the Battle of Gods film. And I have the translation here from the Kanzenshu website that I want to read some of, because this quote, it was often read as Koyama dissing the Battle of Gods movie and Beerus and all of that through the lens of Broly. I don't know if I would quite go that far, but it is interesting to read, and I want to read a little bit of this, because okay. I think it gives a perspective from the guy who, like, created Broly. So he says, "In handling the scripts for the films, what I always worried about each time was the problem of what to do about the opponent Goku fights against. That's because, at the very least, they had to be stronger than the ones from the previous movie. After much hard work, I was unable to come up with an opponent stronger than Broly and fell into a rut where I made him appear three times. That is to say, there's the matter of questioning the idea of Broly is the strongest. As you are well aware, vehement opinions on the subject have been flying back and forth on this message board as well as a variety of other websites." He's very correct about that.
Yeah.
People like to debate power levels online.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest part of the fandom. For this time, Goku's opponent, designed by Toriyama-sensei himself, was even a god of destruction. In the world of Dragon Ball Z, that's a setting where even Broly, before the god of destruction, would face a gap like that between a Yokozuna and the very bottom of the sumo ranks. That Broly reduced to a pushover. Only from the impression I got of the character on the screen, Broly was scarier, no contest. Am I the only one who found that Broly looked overwhelmingly frightening, or am I just biased towards my own creation? So I think that's an interesting quote, because what he's getting at is the idea that Broly is the strongest basically just because of outward appearance. He looked the biggest, he was the bulkiest, he was the scariest, and he was all about power, and that was his whole idea. And I think that is the fundamental miscalculation with the Broly character, is that's just a misreading of Toriyama's creation. Is that the way Toriyama sees the power ladder, like, yes, characters get stronger over time, but it's usually a thing about either defying expectations, as you get with something like when Majin Buu comes out of the egg. You spend chapters and chapters and chapters, or dozens of episodes building up to Majin Buu. What is Majin Buu going to be? He's the strongest enemy, and he's this big, you know, fat pink genie who runs around, you know, goofing off and stuff, right? So you get things like that. Or when characters do get to their most powerful, it's not usually the Broly kind of thing where they just bulk up and get bigger and bigger and bigger. That's very rarely how Toriyama draws characters.
In fact, like in the Cell Saga, there is an explicit point made against that when Trunks tries to defeat Perfect Cell by using that like super bulked up form, and Cell just says, "You're an idiot. Like, yeah, you might be really strong, but everything else about you is unbalanced."
Exactly. So think about, for instance, another good example is Frieza. Frieza has four transformations. His first transformation is sort of small and slim. He gets bigger, he gets bigger again, and then Final Form Frieza is the smallest, slimmest, most compact, and that's kind of how Toriyama tends to like to draw transformations. It's like getting you kind of down, slim, compact, and agile. He did that with Frieza, Cell to a certain extent. Perfect Cell is not the slimmest form of Cell, but the other forms are bigger and bulkier.
And he's the most, like, aerodynamic, you know, like the Imperfect Cell has the tail and, like, the wings jut out in Cell, like... He's very composed and straight and sleek-looking.
Yeah. And the only transformation where I feel like Toriyama goes for a truly, like, maximal aesthetic, other than, like, I don't know, transforming into a great ape, that's a little different, though.
Sure, yeah.
Other than that, is probably Super Saiyan 3, in that you throw in a bunch of extra hair on there, and Goku does get a little more buffed up. But even then, it's not like Goku gets totally, like, ungodly ripped. It's more like his face... His facial features kind of change a little bit. The hair gets long. He moves a little different. But if you think of the other big transformations, like Super Saiyan, or I really like, you know, Super Saiyan 2, Gohan. Gohan honestly does slim down a little bit. Like, he gets really focused in on that power. And I think part of why Battle of Gods is a direct repudiation to the entire Broly aesthetic is, what is Super Saiyan God? It makes Goku smaller.
Yeah.
Like, his whole muscle and body is, like, contract a little bit, and he becomes a, like, thinner, younger version of himself with that red hair and this, like, godly ki around him. Same sort of with, like, Ultra Instinct, Megate no Gokui in the Dragon Ball Super TV series. So that's how transformations and the power dynamics usually work. And then you tie that on to the villains are usually defined by so much more than their power, you know? Like, Frieza is scary because he's a strong guy, but Frieza's also scary because he is a ruthless killer, and he is an emperor who's trying to take over the universe, and all
and
this
he's
other
like,
shit.
He's the opposite of Goku in that Goku is this, like, clumsy, rude country bumpkin with a heart of gold, and then Frieza is this cold, sinister, cruel murderer, but is completely polite and composed the entire time he's doing it.
And elitist. He talks with this, like, very, like, elite kind of way of speaking.
Yeah, he's so polite that he's actually, that he's, like, being rude with how polite he's being, basically.
Exactly. I mean, God, if you want, the clearest example of this ever is the Saiyan Saga, Vegeta and Nappa.
Yeah.
Nappa is the giant, bulking monstrosity, and Vegeta just picks him up and kills him like a fly. And Vegeta is by far the smallest villain Goku has faced other than Emperor Pilaf.
Yeah.
But Vegeta is the most terrifying, and his size has nothing to do with that. It's completely detached from power. So that's one of the things that's always struck me about Broly, is his character design doesn't look like Dragon Ball to me. And I know it's weirdly, like, defining of Dragon Ball for a lot of people, especially, as I said, outside the fandom, because he's on all the fucking merchandise. But big, buff, legendary Super Saiyan Broly, it's weird to me. Like, there are no other Dragon Ball characters that I really think of as Dragon Ball characters, Toriyama creations, who look like that. It's just not the art style of the series, and it's a very bizarre thing. Even Super Saiyan 4 in Dragon Ball GT, which I think has its problems and is not completely Dragon Ball-esque to me, there's kind of an interesting logic behind it of how it brings in the Great Ape stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do become bulkier, I guess, but it's not to the degree of a Broly or something. That even feels a lot more true to me than Broly. Broly is one of the biggest outliers, I think, in the whole series.
I agree. And it's not even just, like, the musculature. It's also his clothing is so gaudy looking to me.
Yeah.
Especially now that we have the contrast with Dragon Ball Super Broly. And if you look at the trailers, or I have his character in the Dragon Ball Legends mobile game now, so I've seen a lot of that character model, and it's such a more sleek, like, composed design, and the, like, the big belt, like, looking thing, and, like, the weird sort of rouge, I don't even know what it is, like, up on the top of his pants. It's just, and he has, like, yeah, like, the jewelry and the bracelet, like, sort of bracers almost thing on his wrist. Like, it's just a weirdly gaudy looking design all around that I'm with you. It just doesn't speak anything about Dragon Ball to me. And it's one of the problems with the movies is particularly for the first one, I'm kind of always expecting at some point that there's going to be like another villain. Like there's going to be like the real villain of the movie is going to show up and not be this big bruiser looking dude, because the big bruiser looking dude is either the henchman like a Nappa, or that's the form that the villain resorts to before they're defeated, like Frieza or Trunks isn't necessarily a villain, but Perfect Cell does try to use that against Super Saiyan 2 Gohan also. Like,
yeah.
That's what those characters try to do, is that when you're trying to show off, you bulk up. But as you said, in Dragon Ball, because it's a martial arts series, it's not a professional wrestling series, it is not about being bulked up. It's about, you know, it's about being a martial artist, is about having control over yourself and your ki and all that, sort of the slightly more philosophical perspective on power and strength, rather than the I can like bench more than you, Goku, so I can win.
Yeah, which is, that's the whole thing about that Takao Koyama quote that just felt so, I don't know, tone deaf about the series, is like, you know, oh, Beerus is just a god. He's basically saying like that's a cop out because he's a god, but Broly is really strong, guys. And it's like, well, but Beerus is like totally defining of Dragon Ball to me.
Yeah, and Beerus is also way more frightening a character to me than Broly has ever been. Like in that movie, when Beerus shows up, like he seems way funny and cool. It's like, haha, this funny cat dude who likes to eat, and he's goofy. And then when he turns to being like, I am actually the god of destruction, and I will straight up destroy your whole planet. Or like when he destroys Zamasu in Dragon Ball Super and like completely obliterates him, it's legitimately frightening because it's in the performance and it's in the attitude of the character.
The scariest Dragon Ball characters tend to be the ones who don't need to show off.
Yeah.
You know? Like, like sometimes they will when they're about to die and they're really angry or something, like Frieza. But, you know, Vegeta is at his most intimidating early in that fight when he just isn't even pretending he considers Kakarot a threat.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that tends to be threatening. Not whatever the fuck Broly is. You know, and then of course Broly just has no character. The closest we get to any motivation is that Kakarot was next to him when they were babies and he cried a lot, and that's why he hates Kakarot. It is indeed one of the most pathetic villain motivations in the history of fiction, and that's pretty much where his character starts and ends. He does talk a lot in the first movie, and I think it's a universal reaction to the first Broly movie if people watch it and go, he talks more than I thought he did.
Yeah, it's like, I always thought he had like two or three lines that were not just Kakaroto, and they're all the lines that he says in the game of like, I'm not a monster, I'm a devil, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And that is who he is in the sequels. He has one line that is not Kakaroto in Broly 2.
And it's just like a big anime cliche. It's like barely even a line.
Yes. And then in Bio Broly, Ben Shimada is still credited, but I'm not sure he talks. Maybe he grunts, and that's what he
does. All he does is go,
yeah, I don't know why they needed to get the actual actor in for that.
Yeah, surely they could have just used clips of him grunting from the other two movies.
Yes, so anyway, that's Broly. You want to talk about the movies themselves?
Let's talk about the movies, Jonathan.
All right, so Sean, let's begin with Dragon Ball Z Movie 8. Here, why don't you read the title in Japanese?
Okay.
Because you're better at this than me. It's in bold here.
Moetsukero Nessin Nessin Chogekin.
Burn up, a red hot, raging, super fierce fight. In English, this movie is just called Broly, the Legendary Super Saiyan. Yeah. The movies have very flamboyant titles in Japanese.
Nessin Nessin Chogekin is a really good title.
It is, and the song, which is that same line, is fucking great. I love the song in this one. I miss Hironobu Kageyama. He needs to do more Dragon Ball music, damn it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yes, so this is the movie. This is Broly 1. It came out March of 1993. Specifically, this debuted March 6th, 1993. And I looked it up. The latest DBZ episode when this aired was DBZ episode 176. That's the first episode of the Cell games, and it's where Mr. Satan fights Cell. So if you saw this right when it came out, you would have just seen Mr. Satan get his ass kicked by Cell, and then the next episode is where Goku versus Cell begins.
Yeah, so this is why you have Super Saiyan 1 Gohan in this movie, which is like one of the more interesting things about it is this is like Super Saiyan. Like this is one of like that tiny little window where Gohan could only go Super Saiyan 1.
Yes.
It's like there's this little tiny brief sliver of Dragon Ball history where Gohan, the Super Saiyan 1, was the most powerful he could be.
Yes. So that is the first. So this is the first movie, Red Hot Raging Super Fierce Fight, which, is it a Red Hot Raging Super Fierce Fight, Sean?
It's the most boring fight in these fucking, or the most boring like climactic fight in these movies. No, I would even take the Bio Broly thing over this just because it's faster and there's legitimately better choreography in that movie in that fight. It is a long, tedious, slow smackdown from Broly as he just beats up every character. Nobody stands a chance. Nobody can do any damage to him at all. It's like an entire fight only composed of that moment in every shonen fight ever. I was going to say Dragon Ball, but it's in everything, where someone launches their big attack at a new villain, and that was like the attack that defeated the last villain. And it's like, oh my god, yeah, you hit it, you nailed them, you finally did it, and there's this like giant cloud of smoke, and then wind blows through, and the smoke starts to clear, and it's a close-up on everyone. They're going, oh! Oh, and then the smoke all clears and the guy's just standing there and is like, haha, I'm totally fine. And it is that over and over and over and over and over again until Goku just, everyone gives Goku their power and Goku one punches him. And that's the whole fight.
Uh-huh.
And it lasts like 15 minutes.
Yes, I think it's actually longer than that. But yes, the first Broly movie is notably the longest Dragon Ball Z movie. It is 72 minutes long. And that is the only one that breaks an hour. The movies 2 and 3 are both 60 minutes. The rest of them range from... movie 1 is only 40, and then the rest are between 45 and 55. Like,
yeah, they're basically like two episodes of the TV show in length.
Yes, but this one is longer. And then of the original 17 films, the only one that is longer than it is the 10th anniversary movie, The Path to Power, which is a full 80. Although that was not produced as part of one of the TV shows, so it's a little different. So this was like the only feature-length Dragon Ball Z movie of the original run. Is that because, Sean, it has a story that really justifies that extra length?
No. God, it would be so much better if they had cut it down to 40 minutes. Like, and it would not be hard, because the plot is so incredibly overcomplicated, and there are, like, a dozen seams that you can see that you could cut and nothing would be changed. But they decided, no, we're going put this to a full 75 minutes.
But what's weird is it does have a lot of plot relative to the other movies.
It has a lot of plot. It just doesn't need a lot of plot.
Yes, so that's a good point, yes. But let's go over the plot really quick. Because the plot of this one is that... Because there's weirdly... It comes at it from a few different directions. It starts with Kaio-sama learning that the South Galaxy has been destroyed.
Yep.
Just completely decimated. That's a lot.
That's one Kai out of a job. South yes. Kai. Sorry, buddy.
Yep. So South Kai is fucked. And Kaio-sama is wondering who could have done this. So he recruits Goku, who is on a day trip with Chi-Chi to try to get Gohan into a nice new private school.
Which is the legitimately the best part of the whole movie, is that opening.
My hobbies are reading and sports. Iconic. It's so great. Even the dub of that part of this movie is fucking awesome.
Like, yeah, it's very funny.
It's very funny. Yeah, they go, because it's good because they basically just transliterated the Japanese and did it exactly. But yeah, so you have that part, and then Goku in his really cool like Sunday best, he's in his like nice suit, leaves and goes to Kaio-sama's planet and gets the job. You have to go investigate what happened in South Galaxy. So Goku goes off to do that. Meanwhile, everybody else is at a picnic?
They're at it's called a hanami in Japanese. They're at like a cherry blossom viewing
party. That makes more sense. Okay.
It's basically, a picnic that just happens when all the cherry blossoms are falling.
Yes.
And Krillin is drunk and singing karaoke.
Yep.
Master Roshi is just drunk and being a pervert.
He's being a pervert, he's drunk. We should say, Krillin's karaoke performance goes on way longer than I remembered.
Yes, it's like a full Inca song. It's like 3 minutes.
It's glorious. Miami Tanaka belts that. It's wonderful. She's doing it in character as drunk Krillin the whole time, and I love it. It's very, very funny. This whole beginning part of the movie is great.
Yes.
And then some mysterious characters land on the planet, and a character named Peregus comes out, and he says to Vegeta, who is inexplicably at the Hanami...
He just decided to stick around so he could sit under a tree with his arms folded and pout while everyone else is having fun.
He's sitting there going, yes. Yeah. So he's sitting there doing that. Paragus comes up to him and is like, hey, Prince Vegeta, we've got a new planet Vegeta for you. Would you like to come see our new planet Vegeta? And if that's not enough, there's a legendary Super Saiyan out there who's been fucking shit up, and we need you to help deal with him. So he strokes Vegeta's ego from two different directions.
It's also notable at this point is the fact that nobody ever questions, what the fuck does it mean that there's a quote-unquote legendary Super Saiyan? Which, that's the original Japanese Densetsu no Super Saiyan. Like, it's like literally legendary, like The Legend of Zelda is Densetsu no Zelda. It's the same word. And it's always something that has, like, seemed peculiar to me about the concept of Broly is, like, what Like, then what are Goku and Vegeta and Gohan? And like, who is, what is everybody else, like, if they're not the legendary Super Saiyan? It's just something that, like, Vegeta never questions this. Because Vegeta, I would assume, just considers himself to be the legendary Super Saiyan. It's fucking, he's the Prince of all Saiyans. He became Super Saiyan. Sure, Kakarot did it first, but fuck that guy. He's a clown. I'm the hot shit. I'm the legendary Super Saiyan.
Yes. So, they all get on the ship together, even drunk Master Roshi, and Oolong, and Gohan, and Krillin, and they all go off to planet Vegeta.
And sexy long hair trunks. That's one of my favorite things about this movie and the BoJack movies. You have long hair trunks with his, like, classic outfit. It's a good look.
It's a very good look. In DBZ Abridged, they call him Princess Trunks.
Yes, it's very funny.
Anyway, so they all get on the ship and they go to New Planet Vegeta. And then a lot of stuff happens on New Planet Vegeta. So let's try to summarize. It's mostly exposition.
Yes, it's a lot of exposition.
Yes, so Goku arrives there as well. And there's a couple different things that are going on here. The part of this movie I always forget about is the indentured servants of this planet.
Indentured servant is maybe, that's a very nice phrase to use. They're slaves.
The slaves, yes, these slave characters who are these weird little green dudes with puffs of purple hair who frankly look like Dr. Seuss characters.
Yes, this one in this booklet you're showing me is named Shamo.
Yeah.
So I didn't catch that name when we were watching it.
No, I did not either. But you've got Shamo, who is the little like leader of the, you know, Dr. Seuss slave characters, and they are working in the mines, I guess, to produce something or other. They're like helping to build the planet. The whole backstory is that Paragus wants revenge on Vegeta. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes.
So he has built this new planet using slave labor from other planets. So this little guy and his friends are from a different planet that is in the same solar system, I guess, because you can see it.
Yeah.
And they are all working to build the new planet Vegeta to trick Prince Vegeta into, like, staying there long enough for a meteor, which is going to collide with the planet, to come and kill Vegeta by colliding with the planet. I think that's Paragus's plot, right?
Yes. I mean, because let's just, instead of trying to take it in order, because it doesn't make any sense in order, let's do the whole Paragus's plot. Because that's what this movie is Paragus's plot.
Which we should say, Broly has nothing to do with.
No. Yes, so let's see if we can reconstruct it in chronological order.
Let's do it,
from Paragus' point of view. So before Planet Vegeta was destroyed by Frieza,
yes,
Paragus had his son Broly, who was put in a pod next to Kakarot, who we now know as Son Goku. Where Broly had an incredible power level like people on Planet Vegeta had almost never seen. Kakarot, of course, being a low class, like, bullshit warrior with, like, power level 5 or something. But Kakarot's always crying, and that annoys Broly. That has nothing to do with Paragus' plot.
For what we know, Paragus doesn't know about that.
Yeah, like, it seems like he kind of realizes it once Goku shows up on New Planet Vegeta or whatever. That he's like, oh, right, there was... Is that the kid that was crying next to my baby? I don't know. That's just some bizarre coincidence. So, but that's important to Broly, so you have to mention it. But it has nothing to do with Paragus' plan, even though that's everything about Broly's motivation. What Paragus' thing is that King Vegeta, who's just Vegeta with a goatee, doesn't like the fact that there's this like baby Saiyan that is so powerful. So he's going to have baby Broly killed. Paragus is not cool with that because he's like, hey man, my baby is so cool. He's going to help out all the Saiyans. And Vegeta with a goatee is like, fuck that. So then they stab baby Broly in what is like one of the most shocking moments in any of these movies. It's because it's all done in silhouette, but you see the knife and everything. It's like really fucked up. Somehow this Saiyan fucked up stabbing a baby. It's like, yeah, it's like fucking warrior race my ass. You can't even stab one baby to death with a knife. So while Frieza is destroying the planet, Paragus and baby Broly, who are both on the point of death, are about to be consumed by, like, the ball that's destroying the planet. But Broly awakens to his power somewhat as a baby and encases them both into a power shell, and they survive that explosion and somehow make it to another planet, whatever. So now Paragus wants revenge on Vegeta, that I guess he just assumes that Prince Vegeta survived. At some point he finds out Prince Vegeta survived. I don't think the movie addresses that.
No.
But he's like, I want revenge on Vegeta for what he did to because he tried to kill me and he tried to kill my baby boy. Meanwhile, while they're going around the universe, Broly ends up fully awakening to his power as the legendary Super Saiyan in a scene that looks a lot like the scene of The Last Jedi, where Luke is about to try to kill young Kylo Ren.
I mean, let's be clear here. If you have not seen Broly movie one, but you have seen Star Wars The Last Jedi, you've seen the scene we're about to describe.
Yeah, it is
identical.
It is eerie, like, down to, like, I legitimately want to, like, load up, like, the Blu-ray of The Last Jedi or something. Just try to, like, do a scene-by-scene, like, because I think there are shots that are, like, the same shot.
I might have to, because we have some time before this podcast comes out, I might have to construct that for us, because I have both of these, and I should just see if I could put them side-by-side, because it is literally, like, Broly is asleep in his tent or house or whatever, and Paragus, who in this case is Luke Skywalker, comes in with a devious plot. In Last Jedi, Luke is going to kill Kylo. In Broly, he's got this like emerald necklace thing he's going
to
put.
Because Paragus wants to control Broly's incredible power, so he has this like mind control device, which is the weird like jewelry that Broly wears.
So he puts it on Broly. Broly, who in this case is Adam Driver. Same kind of thing. Broly wakes up. There's a struggle. The only way it ends differently is that Broly does get the thing put on his head and is controlled by Paragus.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, it's the same scene. And we even noticed after that that Broly's, like, base non-Super Saiyan form, which looks really fucking goofy in this movie.
Yeah, he's, like, tall and lanky and weird.
He looks like Adam Driver.
Yes.
Like, literally, if you were casting an American actor to play Broly, you would cast Adam Driver, at least if you wanted the main, like, base Broly form.
So I'm just assuming this is all some sort of grand plan by Rian Johnson to eventually make the sequel to Dragon Ball Evolution, which is Dragon Ball Z, the legendary Super Saiyan. The movie brings Justin Chatwin back as Goku.
Yes.
And casting Adam Driver as Broly. It's going to be great.
I watched the shit out of that.
Yeah. So there, Paragus gains control of Broly with the mind control stuff and is then using Broly to go around and conquer shit, and he blows up the South Galaxy. And then he hatches this plot.
I think they explained that the South Galaxy thing was like, it got out of hand at one point. That was not specifically part of Paragus's plan.
No. And if you don't question how Paragus and Broly are like traveling between these galaxies because they don't have instant transmission or any of that kind of stuff, I don't know. This is like a lot of the Dragon Ball specials in movies, like the Bardock special does this, where the Saiyans just inexplicably breathe in space, and it's just like, that's not how that's supposed, like, that's, like, actually a plot point of Dragon Ball Z with the Fight of Frieza that Saiyans cannot breathe in space, but whatever, they just sort of ignore it because it would be inconvenient. So he set up everything now that for his revenge plan against Vegeta is to make a new planet Vegeta as a trap for Prince Vegeta, whom he wants revenge against, and his whole plan is to lure Vegeta there using the slaves to, like, concoct, you know, a convincing, like, I have created this kingdom for you, which is one palace on top of a very ominous hill, and everything else on this planet is ruined. So it's not a particularly convincing, like, I've created this glorious new Saiyan Eden. I don't know. It's not great. But he does that. It tricks Vegeta, because Vegeta's a fucking idiot. And then also the legendary Super Saiyan rumors or whatever he uses to lure him there. And he knows that there's a meteor that is coming, and a meteor is going to destroy the planet that is the new planet, Vegeta. So that he's going to use that to kill Vegeta, because I guess he probably knows that Vegeta is a Super Saiyan at this point somehow, so that he wouldn't be able to just, he and Broly, without Broly going crazy, would not just be able to murder Vegeta. Also, an important point is that Paragus wants the planet Earth for himself because it's beautiful and it would be the perfect staging point for a new Saiyan army or whatever, like his staging point for taking over the universe. So that's another reason why he wants to do this whole ridiculous convoluted scheme, is that he knows if he tried to fight Vegeta on Earth with Broly, Earth would be destroyed, and he really wants Earth. And that's his plan. Well, the thing he didn't keep in mind is that Kakarot is also alive, and that's going to piss off Broly, and Broly's going to go crazy. And basically all of that shit that I just said is completely meaningless to this movie, because the movie just boils down to Broly going insane anyways and killing everybody, including Paragus.
Yes, I mean, there is so much of this movie you could cut out if Paragus's plan was, I'm going to sick Broly on these guys.
Yes.
And that's not his plan. It's really hard to remember. That's not his plan. Broly going crazy and fighting these guys is at no point in Paragus's evil plan. Broly is completely incidental to the plot of his own movie.
Like, honestly, having Broly be on new planet Vegeta at all was a stupid thing for Paragus to do, because Broly being present doesn't figure into any part of his plan. The only thing that Broly Broly being there could do is fuck up the plan, because he doesn't want Broly, he specifically doesn't want Broly to fight. He wants the meteor to take care of everything, so I don't even know why Broly is there.
It makes no sense. It is so ridiculously overplotted, especially for a Dragon Ball Z movie, especially when the second half, this is all like first half of the movie stuff, the second half of the movie is Broly hears Kakarot's voice, starts going Kakaroto, and then goes crazy, breaks out of his, like, you know, jeweled restraints and everything, and then he just is, and then he just fights, and they fight for the rest of the movie, and that's it. And that's okay. You can do that as a setup for a Dragon Ball movie. I don't think it should be 75 minutes long, but
yeah,
like,
because that's what, like, every other Dragon Ball movie is this movie, if all it was Paragus sending Broly to go fight Goku and Vegeta, and there was also three henchmen, one which was big and bulky and fat, one which had, like, weird powers, and one which was basically like Zarbon. Like, that's all the other movies. That's all the other movies. That's all you needed to do, and this would have been a totally acceptable Dragon Ball Z movie. Instead, you just have to sit through multiple... There's like two or three scenes with Paragus. They're like 3 to 5 minutes long of him just talking.
Yes.
And it's the one part of this movie that I wish we had subtitles for. Not because I couldn't understand what was being said, because I could, but because if there were subtitles, it would have given me something to focus on, which would just be like, how are they translating this speech? Because I don't give a shit about the content of it, but I would have been like... Like I just almost blacked out for, like, the second half of his speech when Broly starts going crazy and Paragus is like, fuck it, I'm just going to explain my whole EVA plan. I was just like, I heard, like, he's talking about a comet, he's saying something about Earth, I'm good. I don't know, fuck this, dude.
But, like, it's, you know, I do not speak Japanese as nearly as well as you do, Sean. But I do, I've seen this movie many, many times over the years. I have it virtually memorized. I speak enough Japanese that I can get by with what they're saying. I know Dragon Ball, right? The one time I turned to you in this 75-minute movie and was like, Sean, what's going on? Is that where I legitimately lost the thread. And I know all the words. I probably could have put it together. He's saying Shikyu a lot, you know.
He's talking about meteor, yeah.
He says, I know those words. But I did at the end of that monologue, I'm like, Sean, what the fuck was he talking about? Because my eyes glazed over. And you're like, he wants to take over Earth. It makes no sense. So Paragus talks a lot in this movie. There's a big fight, you know. Even then, we say fight. The second half of the movie, when Broly, you know, comes out to play and we have a big brawl, is you have Goku, Trunks, Gohan, eventually Piccolo, eventually Vegeta,
Piccolo fucking shows up.
Yeah. We'll get to what they do with Vegeta, which is its whole other can of worms. And they are just getting their asses handed to them by Broly. It's not even really a fight. It's a beatdown. And it's all the famous shots of Broly, like, taking Gohan's head and just taking him across the wall. There's actually a very clear quote in the new Broly movie trailer. He does this to Vegeta. He does this to Vegeta in the ice. He does the same thing to Gohan in the ruined city, where he just slams his head across an entire wall. That sort of thing. And, you know, I'm probably less down on it than you are, Sean. I think it's bad fight choreography because it is so one-sided, and Dragon Ball fights really never work like that. Like, usually there's at least a little bit of give and take, even if someone is tremendously overpowered. I do think there's some interesting, like, spectacle here. Like, it's a really interesting, I think, set they have with the big ruined city. It looks really cool. Some of the, like, sheer size of the destruction going on is interesting to look at. But dramatically, it is so inert, because you're just waiting for the moment when finally they're going to decide, movie's over, and Goku's going to win. And that's what happens here. It happens in all the Dragon Ball movies, where eventually they have to just turn the movie off and have Goku win. Usually it's done a little more artfully than this, because in this movie what it is everyone is down, they start contributing their energy, Vegeta goes, no, I'm not going to do that. And they go, Vegeta, you have to do that. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Vegeta, you have to do that. I'm the Prince of Science. Okay. And then he contributes his energy, and Goku's like, I've powered up. And he punches Broly, and then there's about 30 seconds left in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it is the most, like, pathetic excuse for a fight. It's finally over after 75 minutes. And that's the first Broly movie. It's very weird.
Yeah, and it's just so... Like, I cannot stress enough for me how deeply unsatisfying the fight is in this movie. Because it is the longest fight in any of these movies. It goes on forever. But there's just no... There's no drama to it at all. Because it's not even just like the... thing that, you know, in these movies they do it all the time, Dragon Ball does it all the time, of like, we're struggling against an opponent we clearly can't defeat, you know, like, probably one of the best examples is the, all the Z fighters, or the, like, the fighters on Earth versus Nappa, in the Saiyan Saga. It's like, they have no hope of actually beating Nappa, but there's so much drama there of, like, one, they're killing off characters, so there's actual, like, meaning plot value to do that, you know, you can't blame the movie that much for not, it doesn't have the space to be able to do that with, like, kind of the mandate it's given. But then also that fight ends up, against Nappa, ends up being about how can we survive long enough so that Goku can get here. And the viewer, and, like, you know, that tension doesn't always exist for the characters, because the characters don't always know whether or not Goku is actually still on his way or not. But for the viewer, at all times, you are seeing, like, Goku's, like, 5 minutes away, he's 3 minutes away, which is three episodes, which is, you know, time, whatever. But you're always on the edge of your seat being like, you just have to live long enough for Goku to get there, and there are stakes to it. So it's not, like, drama in a fight is not necessarily about having both of the opponents being at an equal level of power or something. Like, that can be a lot of fun, and I love those moments in Dragon Ball. But it's also more about, like, what's going on in the story, creating sense of, like, a sense of tensions or stakes with like the pieces you have in front of you. And this movie just chooses basically not to do that, all for the sake of having Broly be so incredibly overpowered that there is no way for the movie to resolve itself. There is no window for there to be like some plausible solution for defeating Broly. So there's just the bullshit of let's all share power, which is something that they like concepts that's not even mentioned anywhere earlier in the movie. It doesn't even have the grace of, like, the second Broly movie, which at least has the Dragon Ball thing. Even if the rules of how the Dragon Balls work feel like they are stretched pretty significantly in that movie, at least the Dragon Balls being there and, like, helping them at the end is something that feels like it is set up by the Dragon Balls existing in the film.
Yes. Here's a comparison I'll make that it might be even more relevant to this just because it's another movie. Okay. And so it works on kind of the same level, is movie 7. So I'm just, this is in my head because on the Blu-ray volume that movie 8, the Broly movie, is on, it shares a volume with movie 7, which is called Super Android 13 in English. It's the three great Super Saiyans in Japanese, because this is the first one that had the three Super Saiyans in it. And this is one of my favorite movies. Favorite Dragon Ball Z movies. Not yeah. favorite movies ever.
It was probably 11 or 12 on when we did our top 10 movies ever podcast.
You know, it's the Apu trilogy and then Dragon Ball Z movie 7.
Yeah. The three great Super Saiyans. Yeah.
Okay. No. But movie 7 is one of the best DBZ movies. And I think it's actually a little underrated. Even though it is easily the most plotless of the DBZ movies.
That's true.
Like, and that's saying something, but it is the only plot in movie 7 is that there were more androids than we knew about when Dr. Gero died. These new androids, androids 13, 14, 15, come out to kill Goku and cause mayhem, and that's it. That's the whole plot, and they fly to the Arctic, and they have a big fight. The fight in it, though, is so good, because even within the constraints of we can't kill characters, there's not really a larger story purpose here, what can we do to make it sort of in an operatic sense, like have peaks and valleys and move and go high and low and stuff? Well, they start with the characters are a little underpowered and they're sort of getting beat up. Then Vegeta like comes into the fray and they kind of push back a little bit. Then the other characters get a little stronger. Okay, so we have this push and pull. Then all the characters go Super Saiyan. And I know this is a pet peeve of yours that they always take too long to go Super Saiyan.
It's something that I feel like it's the reason why there's a lot of American fans that really wish the games always did the Budokai thing of you charge up and become Super Saiyan in the middle of a fight, when I am very much the, you know, you should just be Super Saiyan when you go. I'm fine with games like the Budokai Tenkaichi, like some of those games allow you to change form, but you can go in as Super Saiyan. I'm cool with that. But it's something that, like, Dragon Ball Z never did, it never, ever did the thing where Goku can go Super Saiyan and chooses not to for a long period of time. Like, when fucking the androids show up, Goku goes there, he has the heart virus or whatever, but still, he's like, oh, hey, check this out, blah, I'm Super Saiyan, let's fight. Vegeta shows up, hey, guess what, blah, I'm Super Saiyan, let's fight. Like, if you can go Super Saiyan, they always go Super Saiyan.
Yes, I think in the movies, at their best, they do a kind of, you know, rule of cool thing, where you can just sort of, like, it's cool to have the big moment, middle of the fight, and this movie does that really well. Like, there's this really great choreographed sequence where all three characters go Super Saiyan simultaneously, and, like, there's beams of light, and they do this, like, really big, long shot where all three beams of light, like, shoot up into the sky. And it's really cool. And then the fight goes the other way. They defeat two of the androids. Then the android, who is basically Cell, absorbs the other two, gets strong. Now they're underpowered again. Then we have the whole Genki Dama sequence. And so that is, like, it never stops moving. There's always a movement in the fight. Someone's ahead, someone's behind, someone's ahead. Now we've got our big climax. And in addition to just being very well animated and choreographed, and it's got great music and everything, that gives it this sense of propulsion where, all right, all we've got in movie 7 is a fight, but the fight's good, and it's dramatic, and it's propulsive, and that's what you need. The Broly movie has zero of that, because it is 100% Broly's beating the shit out of everyone, until he's not.
Yeah, and one of the main issues there is that Broly is one of the few Dragon Ball movies, this is true of the first two Broly movies, and Bio Broly has like a little scene near the beginning that kind of lights this, although it still doesn't really do it, is that almost all the other Dragon Ball movies have some henchman characters in them. I think probably the one that doesn't, that is still very successful, is the Janemba movie with the fusion stuff.
Yeah.
But that's because that movie's fucking awesome and they knew what they were doing. And Janemba's a way more interesting character than Broly could ever hope to be. But most of the Dragon Ball movies know that you can't just have the one big, strong character that is the one fight you have at the end of the movie, because even if it's only 40 minutes long, like, the pacing of that is really boring. Because if you have no plot, you need something else. And so most of the movies know you either have, like, a fight with the henchman early on, or you can do the thing like the Android 13 movie does, which is you have the fight with, like, the henchman a little bit early on. That's a really brief exchange. And at the end of the movie, you have multiple fights occurring at the same time, so you have multiple characters that you can focus on. So it's like, here's Trunks is fighting this one, Vegeta's fighting this one, Goku's fighting this one. And so there's an ebb and flow within each of those individual fights, which contribute to the overall fight scene. And it also allows there to be a variety of, you can have, you know, when Super Android 13 shows up, he stomps Goku's shit for a while and he's in the Broly position of, like, I'm so powerful, you can't possibly beat me. That's fine, because we have already had two fights where we won. And that was, like, really satisfying, and those fights were a little bit more equal for a while, and Goku was fighting toe-to-toe with normal Android 13 for a while. And so you've had this, like, changing dynamic of the power level within the fight. The Broly movie all has, like, one little tiny fight with Goku and Broly right when they meet. That's okay. It's the best fight in these movies, probably, honestly, when I'm thinking about it. But then past that point, it's just Broly is incredibly powerful and just laying the shit down and beating up everybody for the whole movie.
Yes, it's dull. Now, all that being said, I still like this movie in the part of my weird lizard brain that likes Dragon Ball Z movies to a degree.
Hmm.
Do I like it as much as the movies I really like? No. Do I like it more than the other two Broly movies and maybe, like, the Lord Slug movie? Yes. And I think it's mostly just because, in terms of, like, what are the normal things I look for in a DBZ movie that I defined earlier on, like the nice animation and the cool music and, you know, just seeing some different things, it gives us a lot of that. Now, does it give us, like, the great fight choreography that I also really want to see? No, and that's its biggest failing. But, you know, I think this movie has one of the most unique aesthetics of the different films. It's got all the stuff on the ruined planet. It does look legitimately cool to me. I think there's a level of, even if the fight itself is monotonous and boring, the sheer spectacle on display of all the destruction they're doing is an impressive animation feat, if nothing else. And this movie does have some really good music that did come back in the series for the rest of the series. There's in particular one battle theme that is just there the entire Buu arc that they kept using, and some of that is good. And the plot doesn't work, but I do kind of appreciate, like, the attempt to build a bigger plot. I don't know why. It could also be just fucking Stockholm Syndrome that I've been having to watch this movie since I was like 12, and I've seen it many times. There's kind of no escaping it in Dragon Ball fandom. And I will say, watching these through on Blu-ray, because I'm, you know, slowly putting together a collection of the new Blu-rays that they're putting out, and I've been watching these, and these are in raw Japanese, there's no subtitles, but seeing them in really nice, restored, high definition with really, really nice sound and everything, and in widescreen for the first time, and especially on your really nice TV I'm jealous of, I'm enjoying all the movies more than I ever have before, because you're getting the most of what the movies are there for, which is the spectacle and the nice animation and the nice sound and stuff. And because, you know, it's not subtitled and I only speak so much Japanese, I can kind of just tune that shit out and just kind of go along for the ride. And, you know, this movie, I would say that this was probably my favorite time watching it. because it was the most easy to enjoy the good things about it. But yeah, no, it's not a great Dragon Ball Z movie. It's not a great movie. And I do not come out of it having any more understanding of why Broly is popular than when I went in.
Yeah. For me, I like it less than you. I think it's like, cause it does have, like, of the three Broly movies, it, like, undoubtedly has the best-looking animation, it has the most interesting setting, it has, like, and it has some, like, legitimately really cool shots and bits in it, and again, like, yeah,
like you know, look,
there are some fucking amazing gifs you can make out of that Broly fight, and some of the earlier sequences, like, and there are little bits and pieces of, like, I love the sequence where Vegeta and Broly come back to the planet and Goku's just there sitting in a windowsill and they walk past and Goku's just like, yo! And there's something about like there's, because that's some of the stuff I like about these movies is there's just those little tiny like shots and sequences that have like a different flavor to them and it's like you don't like see Goku in that position often.
No, and you know, if I were to refine my comments a little more, I do think this movie builds an atmosphere that I like a lot, and I do like how that atmosphere is built over the course of the movie. I like the attempt to have a little more intrigue in it. You know, I wish the payoff was better. The payoff really is the problem here, but even in the payoff section, like, there are some super memorable moments. Like, you know, Broly's whole, I'm not a monster, I'm the fucking devil, bitch, you know, that whole thing.
Akumada.
Yeah. That's iconic for a reason. It's a great line reading from Ben Shimada. It is a great little piece of animation. You know, it looks really cool. It's a nice little moment that, like, punctuates that fight. And then, of course, there's the darkest thing that ever happens in a Dragon Ball Z movie, where he is threatening the little slave children people, the slave Dr. Seuss characters, and he fires an energy beam at them, but instead of letting it hit them, he moves it at the last second, sends it into space, and destroys their planet in front of their very eyes. And this movie does not end with them gathering the Dragon Balls, like, over the credits to, like, save all the people Broly killed. It's really fucking dark. He just commits genocide.
Yeah, it's really fucked up. I don't think any other time I watched this movie I ever appreciated how fucking dark that moment is. And I definitely agree that, like, it has a great atmosphere to it. For me, though, that atmosphere just becomes destroyed by the just incessant fight and how dull it is. Like, for me, I would watch this movie and, like, turn it off as soon as the fight starts, honestly, if, like, I had to watch it again. It just fucking goes and goes and goes. And then there's the thing that we sort of talked around a little bit, which is Vegeta in this movie.
Oh, we should talk about that, yes.
And, yeah, Vegeta is just reduced to this utter fucking sad sack. He just doesn't...
Let's describe what happens, because the moment Broly comes out as the legendary Super Saiyan, and he's in his full buff form, Vegeta falls to his knees and literally says, "It's hopeless, we're all going to die. He is going to kill..." He doesn't say that, he says, "He is going to kill us all." And he says it over and over, and it's like, there's no hope, we're all going to die, what the hell? And it is... It's the most out-of-character thing that happens in a Dragon Ball movie.
Yeah, and it's especially funny when you, like, look at it in contrast to the end of Dragon Ball Super and all the stuff he does at the end of the Tournament of Power, which is him just being like, you know what, fuck it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I will struggle and try my hardest no matter what because that is who I am. Like, that's what it means for Vegeta to have pride, is he's not going to just give up, you know. And it's you only see that happen to Vegeta one time in canon Dragon Ball, which is really Frieza. And at that point, it makes way more sense when Frieza is full power and Vegeta thinks, like, this time for sure, I'm just, like, cheating the fucking Saiyan biology thing and having people shoot me and resurrect me. Like, I totally am Super Saiyan now. And he is so far beyond even standing a chance that it's so clearly hopeless. But also, Vegeta has a whole pre-existing relationship with Frieza that makes that a, like, plausible character thing. That's the only time Vegeta be doing this is okay to me. Him just collapsing because Broly is this quote-unquote legendary Super Saiyan is pathetic.
And also, like, being afraid for his life is, like, the weird thing. Like, that's the line of, like, he's going to kill us all, there's no hope. What the hell does Vegeta care? Like, Vegeta is a fucking warrior who goes into battle not seeming to care all that much about his own life. Like, that's kind of the subtext of a lot of this stuff, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, it's just bizarre.
And it leads to, like, one of the most frustrating sequences in any of these movies, which is at the end when you're building up to Goku defeating Broly and everybody is giving Goku their power. There is a sequence, I swear to God, it's like 5 minutes, where there's, like, three lines said in this fucking movie by these three characters over and over again, with Vegeta saying, like, some variation of, like, "Mudata," like, "It's impossible, like, you can't beat him," and Goku going, Orani Chikaro Kane, which is just give me power, and then Broly just going Kakaroto, and it just fucking just keeps on cutting between these three characters over and over again, and they just keep on saying those lines.
It's you're forgetting where he goes Saiji no Oji, like over and over again.
Oh yeah, Boku wa Saiji no Oji nanda, and he just it's like I'm just the Prince of Saiyans, I'm the Prince of all Saiyans. It's like they just keep on doing it over and over and over, and it's that thing of where it's like, why is this movie 70 minutes? Half of this shit could be cut out, and you would have, like, not only would nothing be worthwhile lost, like, it would make the fight way more fun if it was a lot briefer, because that's one of the ways you make a really powerful character feel really powerful, is have the fight end instantly. Like you don't stand a chance. Like, it's a really quick sequence of Broly beating everybody down, instead of this ridiculous, protracted, and, like, huge thing of him just throwing people around and smashing them into things, which, like, weirdly makes Broly feel kind of weak or pathetic because he just can't finish anybody off, and they just keep on popping up, like kind of like the Nappa fight, but at least Nappa ends up killing some fucking people.
Yes. We're also forgetting about the funniest shot in the movie, which is where Piccolo decides to give Vegeta a pep talk and try to get him into the fight, and Piccolo just lifts Vegeta up by his hair, and Vegeta is just limp like a rag doll, and he's flying Vegeta around the planet being like, look at all this, Vegeta, and it looks like he's holding a troll doll. Like, that's literally, that's what it looks like. He's holding a fucking troll doll, and then he just drops Vegeta, and Vegeta just goes limp and falls onto a building and collapses it. It's dumb.
Yeah.
All right, but here's the thing, Sean. We're not going to have nearly as much to say about the other two movies.
That's true.
Because this is the movie that gives you by far the most to talk about. Broly 2 and 3 are movies.
They happen, yeah.
They exist. They were put on film. They were later scanned digitally and put on DVD and Blu-ray. That's about it. That's about what I can say about the other two.
Then they were remastered for these Blu-rays.
Yeah. All right. So Broly movie 2. I mean, let's give the rundown again like I did with the last one.
Yes.
So Sean, you can give us for movie 10 here. This is movie 10. What is the title?
Kiken na futari, super senshi wa nemurenai.
And that is The Dangerous Duo, Super Warriors Can't Rest. In English, this is called Broly Second Coming, which makes it sound way more epic than it is.
But I just love like the implication that Broly is Dragon Ball Jesus.
Yes.
The Second Coming of Broly.
And this aired in March, or came out in March 12th, 1994, so we're exactly a year later. And the most recent episode to air at this point was DBZ episode 220, which is the first appearance of Babidi. So this is the first one where Babidi appears. This is where they have left the tournament and gone to Babidi's spaceship to try to stop the resurrection of Majin Buu. So the most recent stuff in the anime would have been all the Great Saiyaman material, then all the Tenkaichi Budokai material, and then, you know, Videl getting fucked up by Spulpovich, and then you would meet Babidi. So that's where we are in the anime, and that is when this Broly movie comes out. So, you know, fittingly, this Broly movie is all the new characters. It is Goten and Trunks on an adventure with Videl to go collect the Dragon Balls for no particular reason.
Well, Videl wants to see Shenron is the reason they give.
Yes, but like they don't have specific wishes in mind other than candy.
But Trunks wants to wish for a giant amusement park, and Goten wants to wish for, I think his exact words are, a country filled with endless cakes and sweets.
Which, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
That would have been a better version of this movie if they go to the country filled with endless cake and sweets.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so they're out doing that, and they stumble upon a village that is preparing to sacrifice a young girl to a monster, because otherwise the monster will eat them all. It's basically the plot of, like, I Am Setsuna or fucking Final Fantasy X or something.
Yep.
And they stumble upon this little girl, and instead they decide we're going to be the bait, and they defeat the monster, which is a big dinosaur. But in the course of this, Goten starts crying, basically crocodile tears, because Videl won't give him food. All I could think through this whole sequence is, like, Videl must really like Gohan to be putting up with this shit.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the subtext of the whole thing. But anyway, Gohan is crying. Broly, who has, since the events of the first movie, crash-landed on Earth very nearby and is frozen in ice.
Yeah. He recovered a lot from, very well, from being exploded and being on a planet that was hit by a giant meteor that blew up the entire planet.
Yes. But he has crash-landed on Earth, and he hears in his, you know, icicle state, Goten's crocodile tears, which makes him think of Kakarot's crying, and so he wakes up and starts a fight.
Kakaroto!
And they fight, and then eventually Gohan shows up, and Gohan helps, and it does build to the best scene in any of these movies, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this movie is pretty pat to me. It is mostly just a comedy film. Like, Broly is a comedy villain in most of this. It's mostly Goten and Trunks antics. I generally like Dragon Ball comedy. I think the Goten Trunks comedy in this and the next movie are not all that well calibrated. It's not particularly funny. It's mostly just slapsticky. And it's fine. The visuals are fine. There's some good moments with, like, the countryside. I like having Videl there. I'll always take more Videl. But this one, like, it's not terrible. It's not particularly good. It doesn't even have the most memorable good or bad things of the first movie to me. It does have a great final scene where they all do a Kamehameha together. Other than that,
yeah, I think I like this one more than you because it just, like, one, and it's something where the first movie, I think, is, again, from, like, a more vaguely objective viewpoint or something of just, like, the qualities of an animated film. There's a lot more about the first movie that is impressive from that viewpoint. From just a, like, I'm going to sit here and watch a movie and want to be entertained perspective, this movie being, like, 45 minutes is way better than Broly Legendary Super Saiyan being 70 minutes.
It's definitely 52 minutes. It is 52. On the longer side.
Okay, well,
not that that makes much of a difference, but
yes,
yeah.
You know, it could be cut down a little bit more because this is another one where the fight's not very good and goes on fucking forever without much shifting.
Because until Gohan turns up, it's just a comedy fight.
Yeah.
It's just purely gags. And, you know, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, but it's not very interesting because I don't think the gags are that creative. Like, you know, oh, Trunks peed on Broly. That's, you know, I don't know. Someone's into that.
There's two instances of peeing in this movie. Because yes. Goten pees and then Trunks pees.
Yes, there's a lot of you know, just golden shower antics in this film.
Okay, yeah. You could frame it that way if you want to.
Let's just put it this way, Sean. In this movie, Broly is Donald Trump and Trunks is a Russian hooker.
Okay.
That's what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, but the stuff I like about this movie is mostly that sense of, like, oh, here's, like, it's, like, a different cast of characters. Goku only appears at the end, and that is, like, refreshing. I wish Gohan was more present in the movie and, like, did more in the fight, but it's nice to have, like, this period of Gohan represented because it's, like, you just don't see this, like, youthful Gohan, you know, before all the shit goes bit down with Majin Buu. There's something really cool about that. I love Videl and having Videl be there. Like, yeah, the Goten Trunks antics go on for too long, but, like, at least I get to sit here sort of, like, fantasizing about some lost season of Dragon Ball Z that is the whole season of Videl, Goten Trunks, and Gohan going around and having adventures that is,
I would, like, watch that.
Way more interesting to me than anything that the Broly movie offers me as, like, a Dragon Ball fan of, like, stuff I would like to see more of. Like, there, like, I wouldn't, even if there was a way better version of the first Broly movie, I don't think it would, like, I would care that much. I would watch it and enjoy it as a Dragon Ball fan, but it wouldn't, like, incite anything in me. If this movie, like, was way more focused, it had a better fight, didn't have Broly, or it had another villain in it.
Or not even a villain, just have it be an adventure like the early Dragon Ball movies.
Just yeah, just
fun Dragon Ball quest.
Yeah, if it, like, there's, like, a version of this movie that I really love, and I can think about that while the fight is going on forever.
Yes.
And that's why I like this movie more.
I get that. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the first one's more interesting than this, but, you know, there are fun things to be had here. I did not know the little girl is named Coco.
Yep, so yeah.
Seen that in the book. You know, it's I like that it is another piece of Dragon Ball filler or non-canon material where they save a little princess type character.
Yeah, because that is like every fucking filler episode of the original Dragon Ball anime. Is I feel like they just, like, latched onto this thing that happened, like, twice in the manga, which is going to the village that Oolong is attacking where Goku and Bulma help a little girl, and then the little girl in the Ice Kingdom with all the Muscle Tower stuff. It's like those two things happen, and then the anime's never like, okay.
It's also Chi-Chi. Upa, the Native American girl. Yes.
Well, that's not his little boy. I know that.
Oh, right.
There's a whole joke that Krillin thinks that Upa is a girl.
Okay.
And Goku's like, what, are you an idiot? Upa's clearly a boy. I didn't even need to pon him.
Sorry. This is, you know, it's been a while.
Yeah. The original Dragon Ball anime staff just, like, every fucking filler, like, oh, let's just put a little, like, cute 8-year-old girl that Goku saves.
It's also in the first Dragon Ball movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's here too. You know, it's nice. Here's my question, Sean. This is what I was thinking watching this movie. Why is the monster that they're sacrificing things to not Broly?
Well, it is Broly, because Broly crash landing there is what has, like, destroyed all their crops and everything, and is why they're, like, all fucked up. The monster, like, the actual giant dinosaur there is not great, but, like, the real problem is that Broly landing there has fucked everything up.
Sure, but I just think, like, there could be a more interesting version of this where, like, they go to, like, find, like, who's the villain in the tower over there, and it's like Broly has, like, set up this little kingdom for himself. I don't know if it would be in character, but it would be more interesting.
Yeah, it's like, I think one of the problems with this movie is that, like, Broly is such a nothing character. Yeah. Like, even more so at this point, because this is the movie where all he says is Kakaroto, except for one line, which is just like Muda na koto wo suru na, like, don't do something, like, something so meaningless when Gohan is fighting against him.
The good part of this movie is the end, where Gohan fires a... It's basically the end of the Cell fight, but with the addition of Goten comes in and adds his Kamehameha, and then Goku mysteriously... The Dragon Balls sort of go off, they sort of don't. Goku maybe comes back, maybe doesn't. It's not entirely clear. Even the narrator at the end doesn't know.
Yeah, there's a great narration at the end where it's like... How did Goku suddenly appear? Was it something to do with a miracle produced by the Dragon Balls? I don't know.
Yeah, so Goku is sort of there, sort of not, and he helps, and he gives them encouragement, and they all fire back against Broly. And it's a great scene. It's really well animated. It's got, I think, some good pathos with the characters. Masako Nozawa does a great job with the three, you know, generations of the Goku family, and that's really cool to see. And the music in that scene is fucking fantastic. And that's all great, and it redeems a lot of this movie for me. That it has one of the most memorable moments in any of the movies. Like the shot, they even have it on the back of the box here. They use this for movie advertising all the time.
Yeah.
Of the three, you know, Soen family characters firing the Kamehameha together. It's very cool. It follows a weird theme of the movies at this point, where movie 9, the BoJack film, does this as well, where Goku can just kind of get out of the afterlife mysteriously, but we're not sure if he actually left for weird periods of time. And it makes no sense, and it's not consistent with anything else in the series, but it's kind of fun to see.
I hold fast to the belief that Goku being dead can, at any point, instant transmission into the mortal plane and be fine. He just chooses to go along with all the other bullshit because he has his body in the afterlife because he's you know, was a hero and, like did good things in his life as mortal.
So he's just that bad a father, he could visit his children and
die. Yeah, I mean, because he just turns down, you know, being resurrected by the Dragon Balls. Like, he could have gone back anyways, even if he couldn't, you know, right? Like, the Dragon Balls would have fixed it for him either way. I like the idea, because mortal body Goku can, we know, instant transmission into the other world. He does it multiple points, even in canon material. That's how fucking Cell even gets there. So, I think it's all good. I cannot explain what the Dragon Balls do in this movie and how that works, and why it, like, Shenron maybe was busy and he's like, I'll sort of grant this wish, but I don't want to pop out and I'll just distribute the Dragon Balls around the world anyways. Like, fuck it.
Yeah, even though also at this point the Dragon Balls would grant 2 to 3 wishes depending on which Toriyama remembers, because he changes the rules if we weren't. Yes. So anyway, that is movie 2. Is there anything else to say about this one?
Krillin shows up in the Piccolo role, and that's funny.
It is funny. It is one of, and it's weird because they really try to trick you where they just draw Piccolo with the green face and arms and everything, and then he morphs into Krillin, and it's Krillin is there in the outfit, and it's, you know, it's a fun little gag, and then he gets beaten up.
Yes, he gets one punched by Broly into the side of the mountain, and then he gets the comedy stinger at the end. It's like, hey guys, why are you leaving me here?
Yes,
it's very funny.
All right, now let's talk about the third and most inexplicable of the movies. Bio Broly is what it's called in English, memorably. And, you know, even if it wasn't called that in English, I think that's what we would call it.
Yeah.
But, Sean, let's give the Japanese title, because it's kind of wonderful.
Super Senshi Gekiha Katsuno wa Ore da!
Super Warrior Defeat. I'm the one who will win. This was... So just you could put that on literally any Dragon Ball movie. It's the most generic title. Like, at least the one for the previous movie, The Dangerous Duo, refers to Goten and Trunks, and this was their first movie. This one has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, because the Katsuno wa Ore da, which is the, like, I'm the one who's going to win, that feels like the thing where in the manga, you know, that has, like, the splash pages for, like, the Shonen Jump version.
Yeah.
That is just, like, a cool, like, it's, like, basically, like, the cover for an American comic book. And there's, oftentimes, it'll just be a portrait of one of the characters, like Frieza or Vegeta, standing there, like, looking all badass, because it's a big chapter featuring them. And then there'll be, like, in big text, some blurb. And it will be something like, like I'm the one who's gonna win, and it's always this like weird sort of like out of character like I'm the Prince of Saiyans and I'm gonna rock your shit kind of thing from Vegeta, and it just is in that same tone of voice. If you're like, is a character supposed to be saying this? Is it like, are they saying it to us, the audience? Like, what do you mean? What does this mean? I'm the one who's going to win. It's just like random anime talk, and it's weird and great.
Yeah. So, you know, funny title. Let's see. It came out in July of 1994. The most recent episode to air for this episode was DBZ episode 232, which is the first appearance of Majin Buu. This is the episode where he comes out of the big egg. Coincidentally, I did not plan this, Sean. That's the last episode of DBZ I watched.
Oh, interesting.
In my watch through. So I'm doing this perfectly here. I need to go watch more of that because we just got to Buu. So yes, viewers at home would have just seen Buu for the first time. And they could also go to the theaters to see Bio Broly, who we should say, he is in the movie called that. It's in the booklet even. It says Bio Broly.
Oh, yes. Yes, that is like the dub was being very faithful with all the terminology.
Yes. So Bio Broly is here. And this movie, Sean, it's wild. The thing is, like, this movie has a reputation in fandom for a reason. It does the most inexplicable thing of any Dragon Ball movie where, love him or hate him, Broly is an iconic character.
Yeah.
And they take Broly, you see Broly's physical form for about 10 seconds, and then he is covered in a weird, mysterious sludge that is never really explained what the sludge is. It's just bio goo, I guess. And he is covered in the sludge, and for the rest of the movie, he is in the sludge. He doesn't really fight. He doesn't really do anything. Like, he's not even really the primary threat in this movie. Like, the primary threat is that these scientists built some stupid shit, and now acid is getting all over the island and stuff. And that's what's going on. Broly is not really the most pressing thing here. And Goten and Trunks sort of have to fight him. It's pretty easy. They cover him in acid. He goes away. Then they figure out the acid has to be covered in salt water. And the movie ends. And, yeah, with that, there are some great things in this movie. You've got a fun cast where you also have Mr. Satan and Android 18, and this all happens around the event from the anime. This would have just aired in the anime, where Android 18 surrenders to Mr. Satan in exchange for, I think it's 20,000 zenny or something, or 200,000. Yeah. I'm forgetting how they count the math and, you know, whatever. But anyway, and the movie starts with her going to Mr. Satan's house to extort him, and she's literally doing a mob shakedown where she's like breaking his shit in the house and being like, where's my money? Where's my money? And he doesn't have money, and to get money, he agrees to do a weird exhibition fight with these bio warriors for a friend from elementary school.
Yes. Here, let me...
You explain it because...
over the plot.
Let me be clear for a second. I had not... Before today, the last time I saw Bio Broly was whenever Funimation put out the DVD. So this DVD I have here, I've only watched once. It was back in whenever this DVD came out. I wonder if it even says on here. 2005. So it has been, Sean... 13 years since I've seen...
The last time you watched that movie was around the time we first met each other.
Yes. This movie, but yeah.
Maybe you watched that movie one night, and then the next day you went to school and we met each other for the first time. Who knows?
That could very well have happened. So I do not have the same kind of memory with this movie. I was able to follow it. It's not the most complex language, but because I did get lost on the exposition here.
Yeah, because this movie is structured in a really strange way. Because you actually had me pause when you were watching it when Broly first appears. And it's basically exactly at the middle point of this movie.
Yep.
It's like 20 minutes in.
This is the shortest one. This one's 45 minutes.
Yeah. So almost exactly halfway through, you see Broly for the first time. And so it's a long build-up relative to the length of the movie to get to that point. And the movie really does feel like it is two halves. The first half is like the setup, which is easily the best part of the movie. It's actually, I think, legitimately entertaining.
Yep.
The antics of Goten, Trunks, Android 18, Mr. Satan getting here. And then the second half of the movie is all the shit with Bio Broly that feels like this reject from some lost OVA for some bullshit other anime series that is not anything to do with Dragon Ball. But that first half, as you said, it hooks into the setup from the anime with Android 18 wanting to get her money back. But it is interrupted by a visit from, I think he's called Menmen, I believe.
Yeah, it's Menmen. I just saw it in the...
Yeah, who is basically this Yakuza dude who works for Jaga. I think it's supposed to be Jaguar.
Yeah.
Who is a friend of Mr. Satan's from elementary school, and that they both were studying martial arts together. And then I think it was in the round, like the fifth or sixth grade, they had a fight with each other, and Mr. Satan wins. And so then Jagga just decides he's going to give up martial arts. But now he has used his incredible wealth to create an army of bio soldiers, which by like they are called biosenshi, like they're bio soldiers in Japanese. That's just the word they use. One of whom is, we later discover, Broly, that was received from the weird shaman dude from the second movie, who I guess is like way more evil than it seemed like he was supposed to be. But he has made this army of bio soldiers to sort of shame Mr. Satan and to blackmail Mr. Satan into accepting this fight. He tells Min Min to tell Mr. Satan that he knows that Mr. Satan wet the bed when he was in the sixth grade. And so that's the blackmail. That's like the, oh, Mr. Satan can't let that go out. So that's why he accepts to go to this tournament filled with bio soldiers, which in like another, in a non-Dragon Ball anime, I love the idea that these bio soldiers are legitimately really powerful and are like, would be way more powerful than Mr. Satan, who is on a human scale really fucking strong, but you need Android 18 and Goten and Trunks there to deal with them. And I just like the idea that like, oh no, this dude legitimately stumbled into a thing that if Goku had never arrived on the planet Earth, these bio soldiers would have taken over the entire planet. Right?
Yes.
Like, if Goku had not raised everybody's power level up, the world would have been fucked by these bio soldiers. Luckily for our heroes, they are basically nothing.
I mean, here's the thing. I think the first 20 minutes of this movie are a really good setup for a Dragon Ball movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's really engaging, it's fun, it's silly. I love having Android 18 and Mr. Satan in there. Daisuke Gori, the late Daisuke Gori, who was the original voice of Mr. Satan, one of the best anime voice actors ever. His best role on Dragon Ball probably was Mr. Satan. He's really funny in this. He's really good. The only other movie that he is substantially in is Movie 9, the BoJack one. Yeah. And he's funny in that, too, but that one's mostly a rehash of the Cell game stuff for him. This one is like, you know, it's not all new Mr. Satan stuff, but it's a fun dynamic, him and Android 18, who never really meet again in the main series. I think the whole idea of them going to this island that this guy is, like, it's a fun expository setup because it's so silly, and that, exactly what you said, there's these strong bio warriors, and the whole thing is Mr. Satan bluffs and says, you know, Android 18 is my number one pupil, and these are my other two pupils, and they're going to fight with me. And I think if that were the whole movie, them like fighting through these rings of different like powerful guys and Mr. Satan having to pretend to be the hero while these other ones fought them off, that'd be a great 45 minutes. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think the first 20 minutes are, I enjoy those more than most of the stuff in the second Broly movie. I think it's fun stuff.
That is my favorite of these three movies. That is my favorite sustained sequence. I think that is the most entertaining sustained sequence that any of these movies manage. And a lot of it is, for me, that Mr. Satan stuff, but also Android 18, who's just a very underused character. Kind of like Videl in the second movie. It's just nice to see a character that's not Goku or Vegeta or Gohan, or like, you know, the main people, get a little bit of like the limelight.
And I think they use her well here. Like, it's more on point to me than what they do with Videl, which feels a little generic. Like, you know, it's not a deep characterization of Android 18, but like the running gag that she keeps helping Mr. Satan for more and more money, up to and including saving his life at the end from drowning, it's funny. It's like a good sustained gag through the movie. I've always liked that about this movie. I think it's a unique thing, and it, you know, I do think the movie is better than its reputation for that, if nothing else.
But it also then runs into the problem that like, they never really commit to Android 18 being the main like protagonist of the movie. Even though it feels like she really is supposed to be, it leaves the focus on Goten and Trunks for most of it. Then it just does the fucking thing where Krillin shows up, and even though Krillin is nowhere near as powerful as Android 18, for whatever reason, he's the one that is involved in the climax of the movie. This is like, why? Like, fucking Android 18 is the Android 18 is more powerful than Goten, Trunks, and Krillin fucking combined.
Yes.
Like, I don't even know why they need to be involved.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you get that. All that stuff's really fun. And then they find
a fun little that I do really enjoy the little fight sequence with our heroes fighting the bio soldiers. Is like, it's very brief, but it's like the only thing these movies offer in terms of here's like a little henchman fight that's like, you just get to see our heroes kind of show off a little bit, which most of these movies know to do, and this one just like, these ones tend not to, and so I appreciate that.
Yes, it's good stuff. And then Broly comes out to play, or Bio Broly in this case. He gets covered in sludge, and it's the dumbest character design in the history of Dragon Ball, right?
Yeah. There's it. I think that this might be the only major character from any of the movies, if you're counting Broly and Bio Broly separately, that has literally never been in a video game. I can't think of a video game that has Bio Broly in it.
No, Janemba, Tapion, Cooler, Garlic Jr., at least Garlic Jr.'s henchmen have been in video games. Yes, yeah.
Garlic Jr. has been, like, his the fucking Budokai Tenkaichi games had, like, everybody. Like, they had in, I think it was maybe in 3, I know they had the big robot dude with a giant brain from
Dr. Wheelo.
Yeah, Dr. Wheelo. He's in one of those fucking movies. Like, Bio Broly is not. Fucking, that tells you everything you need to know about the quality of Bio Broly, the villain, and the character design.
Yes. It's, because that's what I think people are reacting to than they are to this movie. I actually think in the grand scheme of Dragon Ball Z movies, this isn't that bad. It's by no means the worst Dragon Ball Z movie to me. It's not even necessarily the worst Broly movie. It's Bio Broly himself that is the worst thing.
Yeah, like the movie itself has a good enough sense of pacing that I think it is the most entertaining of these three.
And I actually think some of the choreography within the fight with Bio Broly is good. Like the way it moves and is edited and just some of the animation of like the things being destroyed around them. Like, is it an interesting fight? No. Does it move at a good clip and, like, does it have a good sense of spatial geography in those things? Yes, I think it has all of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, it's very low pickings between these three movies, but I think this is probably the best climactic fight.
In a lot of ways, weirdly, yeah.
Yeah.
So Bio Broly himself, though, terrible design. The only part of Broly that's recognizable out of it is the weird tufts of Super Saiyan hair. But what they look like is he's just got, like, straw stuck in his ears. Yeah. And other than that, he's just a sludge monster. He's got, like, the red glowing aura from underneath that doesn't even really make any sense.
I mean, he literally just looks like DC Comics Swamp Thing. Like, yeah. It's just that. It's just that, but a little bit goopier and with some Super Saiyan hair sticking out of the back.
Yeah, it's inexplicable. It's dumb. At least it's over fast. Because, again, you don't even hear Broly's name until 20 minutes into the movie. It's another 5 minutes, probably, before he is in sludge form fighting.
Yeah.
And then after that, like, the climax of the movie actually has nothing to do with Broly, because Trunks gets rid of him pretty fast.
Yeah.
And then it's on to, they have to, like, save the island.
Yeah,
and,
from the biofluid.
Yes, which frankly is more compelling anyway, so whatever. And there's a weird thing that you noted where Goten is the one who figures out that salt water will dissolve the acid, and he takes point on that.
It's just like, it's the only time I think I've ever been not convinced by a Masako Nozawa performance is she's is when she, as Goten, has to be like, I figured it out. The salt water is what, you know, like, solidifies the biofluid, and it's just like, what the, like, it she slips into Gohan's
voice. Because it's a Gohan line.
Yeah, it's a Gohan moment, and she slips into Gohan for a second. I'm like, and that's not in any way me criticizing Masako Nozawa. That's me just saying, like, the writing of this movie gets to this point where it just so is not Dragon Ball anymore. That's like, we just have to pick some character to say this. Trunks has had so many lines already in this movie. I guess Goten says it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the movie kind of feels like it's missing a protagonist. Like, yeah. Either that could have been Android 18, who I would have bought saying that.
Yes, absolutely.
Smart. Or you could have had Gohan in here, and that could have been interesting. But, you know, like, overall, I'm actually glad Gohan's not in the movie, because I think it's a good balance of the cast. But
it's
like
the same thing that the second movie has of, like, not having Goku, like, freeze things up. And it's even more with this one with Gohan of, like, the movie is forced to go to a more interesting place than most of these movies by the sheer fact that they do not have the most famous characters to use. They don't have Goku. They choose not to use Gohan, partially because Gohan has nowhere to fit in with how closely they hooked it into the anime thing with the tournament. And so they, like, whether it was an intentional choice or it was just, like, the way things worked out with how its relationship to the anime, they pushed themselves into a corner that forced them to do something more interesting for most of the movie. But then when you get to the end, they just kind of don't know quite what to do with the cast they have to actually wrap things up.
Yeah. So, it's weird, but, you know, I'm not offended by Bio Broly. It's whatever.
I'm not offended by the movie, I'm offended by the character
design. Yes, I mean, not because I like Broly, but because I like good character designs.
Yeah, and it's just, it's the most not Dragon Ball thing, like, maybe in any, like, mainline, like, Dragon Ball material. Like, even the filler would come up with something
oh, yeah.
more appropriate. Dragon Ball GT came up with shit more appropriate. Like, I would take Super Android 17 over this, you know? It's like, Super Android 17 is not an interesting or compelling villain, but he vaguely looks like a Toriyama-drawn character. Like, this... Not only does this Bio Broly not look like a Toriyama character, he barely even looks like an anime character to me.
I agree with that. Yeah, definitely. No, and all the character designs in this movie are pretty bad, all the Bio Warriors, but, like, you're not even looking at them because you're over here looking at fucking Swamp Thing Broly, and it's like, oh, we'll deal with you guys later. This is the problem.
This movie is also, like, weirdly horrifying in some places when you see things get dissolved by the biofluid. Like, there's that weird cat monster that looks like the thing that Ozymandias has in Watchmen that just gets fucking, swallowed and gooped up, which they show that clip twice. There's a lot of screaming and implied people being dissolved when, like, all those scientists, there's like 30 scientists crammed into that elevator, and then the goop starts pouring in and they cut away from it, but you know all those people got dissolved by that fluid, and, like, that's a really horrifying way to get killed.
Yes. Should we also mention that in the version we watched, they've censored a shot?
Sure, yeah.
Because this has been exploding the message boards. As usual, I think message boards overreact to everything. But it is worth noting that, so these new Blu-rays are from Toei in Japan, so they're straight from the source. What's weird is that they had done these HD masters last year for Amazon Japan and Netflix Japan. And they were shown there. And those HD remasters... people were really praising them. They looked really nice. They did not have the sound yet that the Blu-rays had. They had the older soundtracks. But then when they started putting these out on Blu-ray, there's been a lot of debate online of did they change the image too much for the Blu-rays. For my money, from what I've seen, like screenshots to the actual Blu-rays on various TVs, because I've seen these on a couple different TVs, I think they look really good. I think clearly some digital noise reduction has been implied over the original Amazon and Netflix masters, and I might prefer with less, but at the same time, when you actually see them in motion, I think some of the things people are complaining about, like, you know, I saw some screenshots that showed, like, no grain and, like, really high contrast levels, and then I would look at this on your TV, and I'm like, it's all there, and I'm actually seeing all the detail just fine, so yeah. I think some of this is what you use to take screenshots and stuff. But then this debate reached a fever pitch when the most recent volume, which is Volume 6, which is what we were watching, this is with movies 11 and 12, Bio Broly and Fusion Reborn, and this came out, and they have censored 3 shots total, 2 from Bio Broly, 1 from Fusion. In Bio Broly, there are 2 shots sequentially where Trunks gives Broly the finger. He flips him off, and in both shots, Trunks' hand has been, the middle finger is gone, and he just has a fist up. In one shot, I don't think you'd ever notice it if you didn't know it was there.
Yeah.
But in the other one, he is clearly moving his fist back and forth, flipping him off, and there's no middle finger anymore. And then the other shot is in Fusion Reborn. There's a scene where Gogeta, the fusion, fails, and he's fat Gogeta, and he is all beat up, and he lifts his finger. That one's even briefer. It's like maybe a second tops he has his middle finger up, but it's also censored. So... yeah, I mean, what did you think of that? It's, you know, I want to put it in perspective. It's like less than 10 seconds of footage total in, you know, 17 movies. Like, hopefully, the last volumes have yet to come out. Those come out next week. Hopefully, there's no censorship on those. But it's weird.
It's inexplicable to me. I don't get it. Because also, it's contrasted, like the shot... of the first shot of Trunks flipping the bird that is censored is immediately preceded by a shot where Trunks, the like 12-year-old boy, drops his pants to like moon Broly, and which he is something he does in the second movie also. It's slightly different in this one where he drops his pants so far that you actually see his scrotum.
Yes, you see little boy's scrotum in this movie.
And then immediately after that he puts his pants up and flips off Broly, and they censored that. That's what's inexplicable to me. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, it's impossible for me to, like, obviously, ideally, don't censor it. It doesn't make sense. I don't know why you would. It is pretty noticeable in the second shot that it happens in, but also it is virtually impossible for me to summon up any sort of enthusiasm for, like, they're destroying Dragon Ball Z by censoring the middle finger on Trunks in 2 shots in the Bio Broly movie that is, you know, there's a good chance that this might have been the last time I ever see Bio Broly. I don't know. I'm probably not going to really go out of my way that much to watch Bio Broly again.
I agree.
I'm kind of surprised that I saw it this time.
I agree. There are much more significant things they could be censoring and aren't. Like, Not that I need to see the little boy penis on all the shots of Goku in the pod or something, but if they were censoring that the way they did in Dragon Ball Kai, for instance, where they like redraw the tail around on him, mm-hmm. that would piss me off way more because it just becomes so much more noticeable. It's such a weird puritanical thing. The middle finger is also a weird puritanical thing. I don't get it. I don't know if there's something going on in the culture in Japan that made them need, they feel the need to do this. It's bizarre. Do I care? No, it's, you know, god damn it. It's less than 10 seconds of footage in one of the worst movies, and then less than 2 seconds of footage in one of the best movies, but also, like, it's, I don't, you know, it's like people are, you know, going, like, they failed the entire project because of these 2 moments of censorship. It's like, the 2 moments of censorship are dumb, but I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater yeah. here. You, I mean, this is the best the Dragon Ball movies have ever looked and especially sounded, and there's just no doubt in my mind of that, watching these, especially on your nice TV that I think has a lot of good color accuracy and everything. Like, you know, the overall effort is very good. Hopefully, I don't know, like, if they give these masters to Funimation for America, I hope that censorship isn't in it. I would hate for that to be the only way these movies are distributed in the future. But, you know, look, I have my Bio Broly DVD right here.
Yeah.
It's the original 4x3 I should say, the Blu-rays are in widescreen. That does not mean there's more image. There's actually less because they're matted, but that also does not mean they're cropped. Long discussion. They were supposed to be seen in widescreen, but there is extra information. My Bio Broly does have the full picture. It's got the full bird, and no one's taken it from me. So the movie is not disappearing. It's fine, you know?
You just don't have it on your Blu-ray. I'm sure this must already exist. Somebody must have already made a version of the movie that puts that back in.
Yeah, well, like, and also if you have the Amazon or Netflix master, it's there. So
there you go. So
And it's otherwise the same thing. So yes.
You know, I lived, there was a long period of my life that I lived with Dragon Ball that was a lot more heavily censored than that. So it's,
And like, if you're going to be upset about something, I would be way more upset about like what they did with like Dragon Ball Kai when they did that, where they added in a lot of the American style censoring to the Japanese product.
Yeah.
And they did it a lot more egregiously. This is like, this was nothing compared to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, worth mentioning. It is mostly because I'm less offended than I am fucking confused. I just don't get it.
That's, it's just inexplicable to me.
Yeah. So who knows? Very curious to see, because the only things they would have to censor in the last 2 batches of movies is the stuff that they have not been censoring, like the little boy penis stuff.
Yeah.
So, who knows? I feel like I've said that phrase too many times on this podcast to be safe.
Yeah.
You know. If I ever run for president, people are going to find that and cut it out. And, you know, we'll see.
This is Jonathan Lack. Did you hear what he has to say about little boy penises?
All right. So, Sean, let's now, I mean, do we have any final thoughts on the Broly phenomenon, on the 3 Broly movies?
These movies are not very good. Most of the Dragon Ball Z movies aren't, like, stellar or anything, but these movies are some of the worst ones. Bio Broly is probably the most entertaining. I like some of the stuff in The Second Coming. The first movie has lots of cool stuff, but it's very boring.
The first movie is weirdly both the best and the worst one.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, because it has the most ambition, it has definitely the most high points in terms of, like, things that you would use to praise it, but it also has the most things you would use to ding it. So it's like, do you want the higher ambition but the higher failures, or the almost no ambition but maybe the more mild successes?
And for this era of Dragon Ball movies, I basically always go for the latter, because, okay. because the higher ambition is always still so small in the scale of things, you know, like the mandate that these movies had and like the style that anime films had with this like festival structure and stuff was so limited, that I personally prefer the like, no, like, let's just go with like the modest ambition with a solid execution is what I kind of want from them.
Yes. All right. Speaking of that though, let's end on a more positive note. Sean, I'm going to rank for you my top 5 DBZ movies.
Okay.
Yes, I was thinking at some point of doing a project of ranking all 17 original theatrical Dragon Ball films, and that was just too much, and I have not had time to rewatch all 17 of them.
Yeah.
Although I'm getting through them vaguely or slowly with the Blu-ray releases here. But I also just, at a certain point, I don't know how I rank movies like 10 and 11 and 4 and all the bad ones together, just put them in a blender. They're over there.
Yeah, and as I said at the beginning of this podcast, like, it is hard to watch these movies in quick succession because, like, their flaws become so readily apparent.
And I'm also not ranking the Dragon Ball movies, the non-Z original Dragon Ball movies, because those are all really good. Like, there's three that they made during the run of Dragon Ball. There's the one that is called over here Curse of the Blood Rubies, even though the term Blood Rubies is at no point used in the original Japanese. That movie is just called Dragon Ball The Legend of Shenron.
I think I watched that movie originally on a rented VHS from Blockbuster.
Yep, I remember that too. It was a really weird dub. But anyway, that one is a retelling. And the weird thing about the original Dragon Ball movies is they're all pseudo-retellings of parts of the anime, but they're really weird and bizarre and fun. I really like that first one. The second one, Sleeping Princess in Devil's Castle, which is the only movie I think to have the exact same title in both English and Japanese, is a retelling of the part where they go get lunch for lunch, the woman, not lunch, the meal for Master Roshi. But it all involves this like satanic cult in a castle. It's fucking amazing. Have you seen that one, Sean?
Yes, I've seen all of them.
Okay, yeah. It's so good. It's so fun. And then the third one, which is called Mystical Adventure or Imagine, Mystical Adventure basically, but that's actually both English and Japanese. It's the same again.
It's Mystical Great Adventure.
Okay, yeah. Makufushigi Daiboken. That one is also really fun. It basically combines the Red Ribbon Army arc, the Tenshinhan arc, and the training arc and the original tournament arc all together. And it is the weirdest hodgepodge, but I love it. I don't know how I would rank those because those are all good. And then the Dragon Ball 10th anniversary movie, which aired after GT. It was like the last thing of the original run of Dragon Ball anime. And it goes back to, it basically retells the original Bulma and Goku arc, but with the Red Ribbon Army stuff in place of Emperor Pilaf. It's really good.
I like it a lot.
It's got the Dragon Ball GT art style. So it's very, Katsuyoshi Nakatsuru was the character designer at that point. Very angular. It's the blue dogi and stuff. It's really cool to see. It's like an alternate view on all this. It's got great music.
That's also one of my favorite performances from Masako Nozawa, because she gets to go back and do Kid Goku with all the experience she's now had. And it's a really interesting, because she does Kid Goku a little bit differently, I feel like, in that movie.
Absolutely. Like, as a movie, it honestly might be the best behind, like, the new ones we have. Because it's the only other one that feels like it was produced as a full theatrical animated film. You know, it's a full 80 minutes long. It's feature length. It has a big arc to it. They use Android 8. Hot-chan. And the movie ends with Goku being sad about Hachan and powering up, and then they resurrect him. It's a really lovely little movie. So I would give a shout-out to all of those. But of the 13 DBZ movies, Sean, I'm going to rank my top five.
Okay.
So my top five would be, let's go bottom to top. Number five, I already talked about this one, Dragon Ball Z Movie 7. This is Super Android 13 in English. And it is the one that I talked about earlier, that it has basically no story to speak of, but the animation is so good, it employs the rule of cool very, very well throughout. It's a blast. The whole thing where he forms the Genki Dama at the end is one of my favorite Genki Dama sequences, and then he absorbs the Genki Dama into his own spirit and uses it to punch Android 13 apart. It's very fun.
Okay, so this is Chokugen Battle Super Sandai Super Saiyajin. Or Extreme Battle Three Great Super Saiyans, or Saiyans in Japanese.
Yes, so that's a good title. My number four favorite is Dragon Ball Z Movie 5. It's called Cooler's Revenge in English. This is the first of the two Cooler movies, also known as the Good Cooler Movie. What's its Japanese title, Sean?
Tobikiri no Saikyo to Tai Saikyo. The Incredible Strongest versus Strongest.
I love that title, too. It's really great. And also, DBZ Movie 5 has my favorite of the Hironobu Kageyama songs for the Dragon Ball Z movies. It's the it sounds like the best training montage song ever. I would love to just, like, lay it over a Rocky movie because it's just the fucking best song. I love it. But Dragon Ball Z Movie 5 is great. It's got some of the best animation. It's got that whole part at sunset where they're out camping and then Cooler attacks.
Yeah.
It also just has a really good flow to it where it starts with them getting ambushed by Cooler's guys. Goku jumps in to save Gohan. He takes a full blast in the back from Cooler and is then kind of on the verge of death. And Gohan takes Haya Dragon, who... We should talk about Haya Dragon for a second.
Yeah, Icarus in the original English dub.
Yeah, he takes Haya Dragon out to go to Korin's tower and get the Senzu beans and then come back. And it's sort of like they're doing this kind of guerrilla warfare thing for a little while. And then Piccolo comes in to hold them off while Gohan goes and saves Goku. And all of that is really cool. Piccolo has easily his best moment in all 13. Well, no, his best moment is in my number one choice. We'll get to that later. But as a fight, he's got his best stuff here, where he really, like, he doesn't win against Cooler, but he basically takes on all the other minions and wins, and there's some really cool moves in there. Then Goku gets back into the fight. He fights Cooler. I love Cooler's whole transformation and his look. I love Ryusei Nakao as Cooler, because he voices him as if Frieza was a much more serious, like, general type. Like, he sounds like he's Frieza's military leader or something. Yeah. And this movie is just, it's kind of exactly what I want a DBZ movie to be. I have no complaints with it. It's really fun.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is, the first Cooler movie is one of my personal favorites. And it has, you know, it is maybe in some ways the most egregious version of the I don't go Super Saiyan until the end. Because it's also just so confusing, because it's like trying to do the Frieza stuff where Goku has, this is the first time Goku's ever gone Super Saiyan, but clearly it can't be, and it's one of the more confusing with, like, the lore or whatever of Dragon Ball, the canon, in that respect. But if you can put that out of mind, it is so much fun, and it's one of the most gorgeous looking of the movies.
All right, then I have DBZ Movie 13. This is the one that in English is called Wrath of the Dragon, and I've never really figured out why. What is it called in Japanese, Sean?
You can buck huts! Goku ga yara neba, dare ga yaru, which means Dragon Fist Explosion. If Goku can't do it, who will?
Why didn't they call this Dragon Fist Explosion, Sean?
Dragon Fist Explosion. That, like, Dragon Fist Explosion sounds like it should be, like, the name of an OP for that's like, that's for the, whenever they bring Dragon Ball Super back, that's the new OP song.
I have not seen, this is the one it's been the longest since I've seen DBZ 13 on this list, so it's the hardest to rank for me. But I just know I love this one. It's got the best story of any of the Dragon Ball Z movies, because the whole story of this one is the one with the character Tapion, who is this mysterious warrior who has this, like, there's this what's the villain in Movie 13 called? Do you remember?
Hildegarn.
Hildegarn, yeah. And he's, like, this mystical, and he has to play, Tapion has to, like, play the ocarina to keep Hildegarn asleep, and there's that whole thing. And he also has the sword, so it's kind of a backstory for how Trunks gets his sword, because he gets Tapion's sword at the end.
Yeah, which is also, though, very confusing, because this movie clearly could not have happened in future Trunks' original timeline, that everyone would be dead. And so it's like, I just feel like the experience I had when I first watched that movie was like, oh, cool, that's how Trunks got the sword. And then during the credits, they start playing clips of future Trunks with the sword and stuff fighting Frieza. And that's when it's like, wait, no, but that can't. No, wait. And it's like, it's both filling in a gap, but then also creating 100 more questions about that gap.
Yes, but it is still a nice story. Trunks is very clearly, like, our POV character here. He has a really nice, I think, emotional tale over the course of it. It's a lot more subdued than most of the DBZ movies. But I think it's really good, and it's a really nice send-off to DBZ as a thing.
Yeah, it's of the, like, Dragon Ball Z movies, it's the one that I think is most successful at being its own thing. Because it's like Broly tries to, but can't quite figure out how to do it. And this movie, Wrath of the Dragon, or number 13.
Dragon Fist Explosion.
Yeah, Dragon Fist Explosion. If Goku can't do it, who will? I think the path that it finds is you focus on Kid Trunks, who is a character that doesn't have a huge spotlight in Dragon Ball Z, and give him an arc and kind of create what, like, almost feels like a weird Dragon Quest story in some ways around it. I like that one a lot.
Oh, Tapion is 100% a Dragon Quest character.
Yes, absolutely. With his cursed flute and all that shit. Yeah,
it's great. The one thing about this movie that is a little lackluster is the ending. The actual Dragon Fist Explosion comes out of nowhere and is not that cool. But, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's a really, I appreciate it a lot because I love that move in video games.
Yes.
So it's cool.
Also, this movie has my other favorite theme song, the one that goes, Kono Aoi Hoshiwa. It's really good. And then it gets into the bigger part. It's got some of Hironobu Kageyama's best vocals. It's great. All right. That's movie 13. Number 2 is DBZ movie 12. We've already talked about it. It's the one that's called Fusion Reborn in English. The Japanese title is fairly close.
Yes. Fukatsu no Fusion. Goku to Vegeta. The Rebirth of Fusion, Goku and Vegeta.
Yes. And this one, actually, when they say the Rebirth of Fusion, you should know, because of when this movie came out, they are not referring to Vegito. Vegito had not been in the manga or anime at this point. It is referring to Goten and Trunks. Why am I forgetting what they're called?
Gotenks.
Yeah, there we go.
I was so confused by you not knowing what it was. I actually didn't know what you were talking about.
I know. I got
like, there's no way he doesn't know what Gotenks is.
No, I do. But anyway, Gotenks. Because this even plays on the goat, because it's the dance form of fusion. There's no Potara in this. It is the Gogeta thing very much mirrors how they do Gotenks, where first he messes it up and is a big fat guy and gets beat up, and then he has to do it again, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes place in that middle part where Majin Buu is still Majin Buu and not quite, I think he maybe had turned into Super Buu at this point in the anime. But again, we had not had Vegito, the more canonical version of this fusion. But this is the movie where there is an accident in hell, and something goes wrong, and this big creature named Janemba escapes, and then the floodgates of hell are opened onto Earth, and Frieza and Cell, and then this is worth talking about, a cartoon version of Hitler is unleashed upon the Earth. Meanwhile, back in hell, in the afterlife, Goku and Vegeta, who are both dead, fight Janemba. We also get Paikuhan, the character from the Anno Yuichi Budokai arc of the anime, the filler arc, who I really like. Paikuhan is basically Hit before we had Hit.
Yeah, it's like Hit and Piccolo.
Had a baby, yes. Yeah. And so we get Paikuhan, and that's fun. Janemba is a really fun and different villain. Both of his forms, his big fat Majin Buu form and his really cool Morse Felt Super Buu form,
yeah,
are both really interesting designs. This movie has really weird, like surrealistic artwork in the background where all of the afterlife is turning into like weird jelly bean bubbles. It's got a great sense of humor. The fight is fan-fucking-tastic, and Gogeta is, of course, a great character. Vegeta is used better here than he is in any of the other Dragon Ball movies easily, other than, you know, the actual new ones. But in the original 13, he's used the best here. And it's got a great song. The fusion song at the end is fucking great. This one's just great. The only nick on it really is probably Cartoon Hitler, but I don't even know what to say about it.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorites. This, I think if you just want to watch the fight in one of these movies, Fusion Reborn has easily the best fight. Like, because it was on the same disc as Bio Broly, I wanted to like wash my mouth out with like a decent looking Dragon Ball movie. So we just watched a bit of when Super Saiyan 3 Goku fights Super Janemba, and it's just awesome. And like it has such a sense of choreography. It has such a sense of impact behind the hits. You know, there's just like one of the just best sort of little like one like sort of sequence in a fight in Dragon Ball animation, I think, is when Super Saiyan 3 Goku just does his, like, Janemba dodges a hit, Goku's kind of low on the ground, he puts his hands on the ground and does this, like, full body kick to Janemba's head. It's just like, you know, like a 1 second sequence, but it just has so much weight and impact and fluidity to the animation. It's a hell of a movie.
Yes, it's really fun. And, you know, there's also Cartoon Hitler if you want to be both amused and offended.
Yes. And it also just, you know, the crazy, weird world they live in. If you're looking at Dragon Ball Z movies as fodder for cool things in the video games, which is honestly what I mostly look at these movies as, that's a really fun stage in those movies. And Super Janemba, I really want that to be in an eventual character in Dragon Ball FighterZ because he has all the weird dimensional powers that would give him so many cool abilities.
I would take him over Cooler and Broly every day of the week.
Yeah.
All right. Then my favorite movie, and this is my favorite of all the original theatrical DBZ movies, I even like it kind of on par with some of the newer ones, is Dragon Ball Z Movie 1. Sadly, there is no fun title for you to read in Japanese, Sean, because its title was just Dragon Ball Z in Japan. But it was known as Dead Zone in America. This is the Garlic Jr. one. It is the shortest movie. It's only 39 minutes long. And it's just perfect. It's exactly what I want out of a Dragon Ball movie, where it has the exact amount of plot to fill the 39 minutes it has, which is Garlic Jr. is looking for the Dragon Balls because he wants to wish for immortality. Gohan happens to have a Dragon Ball on his head because of the hat, so he is kidnapped. Goku goes to save his son. It very much is a play on the Raditz story, of course. But Goku goes to save his son. Piccolo, who was beat up by Garlic Jr.'s men because they were trying to kill Kami, comes to help as well. Kami gets involved in the fight because the whole thing is that Garlic Jr.'s father was in contention to be Kami-sama. And this actually fits in fairly well with the canon of Dragon Ball, because Kami-sama is a role that is passed down. And in the original Dragon Ball, we do get Kami-sama talking about the old Kami and that sort of thing, and how he became Kami. So Garlic Jr. wants to avenge his father for that. Garlic Jr. does make the wish on the Dragon Balls and become immortal in this movie, which is the only time anyone's ever managed to do that, which is really cool. You get some amazing fight choreography in this one. There's the whole, because it's all the original, like, it's like early DBZ, late Dragon Ball, where Toriyama's art is still very rounded, and I really like that.
It's before he moved to doing like the really high muscle definition on the characters, so it's like they look more like normal people in some ways. They look like Goku is built more like an actual martial artist instead of like this big, almost like Bruce Lee, like super buffed up, like,
yes,
you know, zero fat content kind of guy.
And Goku still uses Kintoan and the power pole, the Nuebo. Yes, so you've got all of that in here. There's a fight in this where he is fighting the three henchmen while, like, running across the building, and he's using Nuebo, and he, like, at one point he hits someone with it, then moves it back, and then has it extend, and it goes all the way back and hits someone, and they get thrown into another building. That's all really cool. Some of base Goku's moves in the video game Dragon Ball FighterZ are from this movie.
Yeah.
The whole team up with Piccolo is really well done. Krillin's got some fun stuff in here. It's got one of my favorite moments where Goku and Piccolo think they've beaten Garlic Jr., and then Piccolo turns to him and says, "We're not done here. It's your turn now. Let's do this." And they start, like, getting their armor off so they can just have a fight right then and there.
It's like this fun alternative way that the Raditz fight could have gone if Goku and Piccolo both beat up Raditz and survived at the end, and then it's just immediately like, "Let's throw down, motherfucker. Let's do this."
Yep.
I'm gonna fucking Makan Kosapo your ass off.
And then the other thing is, this movie has just the best animation. It looks so cool. I love the weird Night on Bald Mountain tower that Garlic Jr. lives in. The designs of all of the henchmen are easily my favorite henchmen designs. They look the most like Toriyama characters, probably because he actually had more to do with this one, I'm guessing, because it was the first DBZ movie. Yeah. It's got a great soundtrack. A lot of the most famous Dragon Ball Z music, especially battle music, comes from this one. And I think just overall, as in terms of like just pacing, it is 39 completely svelte, kind of perfect minutes. There's no wasted time. I'm even a big fan of Gohan's musical number because it is so...
Yes.
It's Pink Elephants on Parade for Dragon Ball.
Uh-huh.
What could be better? It's amazing. And I don't know. There's not a wasted second in this thing. It is all fun. It feels like it has way more meaningful story than a lot of the other movies because it's packed into that nice, compact, like, 40 minutes. And I don't know. I've just always liked it. If I want to, like, just turn on a DBZ movie and watch it, that is the one I will watch because it is just a perfect, like, little shot of DBZ goodness, and I love this movie, and I own many versions of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the same level of affection for that one as you do, but it's definitely one of the best. It's my favorite of those first, because in my mind, those first three DBZ movies are always kind of paired together because it's all the pre-Super Saiyan
stuff. And they were in English for us for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, of that, like, trilogy, one might call it. I don't know. That is definitely the strongest, and it is easily in the top five.
Yes.
But since I'm not going to try to think of like what my favorite would be.
That's okay.
It's been too long since I watched some of these. I will say though, one that I think I would for sure, for me personally, I would replace Super Android 13 with the BoJack movie, which I have also now discovered has easily the best title of
it's so
movies
good.
In Japanese. Ginga Giri Giri Buchigiri no Sugoi Yatsu. Which means the galaxy at the brink, the super incredible guy. Which is such a great, super hyper little translation of Buchigiri no Sugoi Yatsu. But I also I'm a big fan of using the word yatsu, the Japanese word yatsu, in titles for things.
They use it in a lot of these. Yeah. It's great. I actually watched it just last night.
That's a great one. Like, I think, like, for me, that is, like, in the same kind of bracket as Super Android 13. But I always have loved that one's, like, place in the, like, that's the one that feels like this movie could have happened. Like, this is like, yeah, like, it's between the end of Cell and the Boo stuff. It's still like young Gohan. You get super, like, this is Trunks at his absolute sexiest because he has long hair and he has the jacket, but with like the sleeves ripped off, and it is the raddest look.
And he has the fight with Tenshinhan at the Tenkaichi Daibudokai. Yeah. And it's really fun where he and Tenshinhan are just, Tenshinhan tells him, like, you know, go all out on me, but they have a really fun, friendly brawl, and they both, you know, have their shirts off. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it just makes good use of a bunch of different characters. It's the first Dragon Ball Z movie that didn't make heavy use of Goku. Like, he's only kind of in it at the end where he magically helps out Gohan.
Oh, and man, because this would probably be my number six.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, because this is the thing. There are a lot I really do like. I would throw this one in that you're mentioning. I would also throw in movies 2 and 3 I really like. Those are all the ones that I consider the really good ones. But
yeah,
I think,
the one that, like, on a rainy day, I'll pop that in and have a great time.
But 9, another couple things I love about 9, Sean, is it's the only thing in all of DBZ I know of where Gohan wears the traditional orange gi.
Yes.
Like, I'm sure he does in little moments here and there, but in terms of a sustained thing, he's wearing Goku's gi in this. It's a really cool design. When he goes Super Saiyan 2 in it, it's great. And the sequence where he goes Super Saiyan 2 at the end of this is so ludicrously well done.
God, yeah, because there's, like, all, like, the weird, like, energy wires, like, trying to hold him back, and he just, like, walks through it, and everyone, it's also, all the minions are like, oh, shit.
The music in that section is one of my favorite pieces of music Shunsuke Kikuchi ever wrote. It's so great. Like, nothing can beat Unmei no Hi, the insert song that accompanies this in the Cell arc, but if they were to replace Unmei no Hi with, like, a piece of normal music, this would be it. It's so good. I actually, even I popped in my DVD of Dragon Ball Z Kai, because I wanted to see, did they use Unmei no Hi there, or did they do something else? Yeah. And they just used a random BGM track. They did not even use this. Yeah, very disappointing. But they should have used this, because it's such a good piece.
I'm also probably heavily biased in favor of this movie, because this is the one I owned on DVD for the longest time, and so it's easily the one I've seen the most, because it was the one that, like, when I was, like, 12 or something on a rainy day, this is the one I would watch. It's the first Dragon Ball thing I had ever seen in Japanese.
Nice.
Because I had seen it so many times, I'm like, I might as well watch it in Japanese, and it's like, this is fucking cool. Mr. Satan's awesome.
Yep. Movie.
That's the first time I ever found out that he was supposed to be called Mr. Satan, was when I watched that in Japanese. It never calls him Mr. Satan. I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, right, because the dub calls him Hercule, even though in the animation it says Mr. Satan everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. You know what I would always do with the DVDs, Sean, back when I had them, is because you would get such little bursts of Dragon Ball, is I would just go back and forth and watch it English-Japanese, and I would like, and that's how I developed my love for the Japanese version, was just like, I remember the first volume of DBZ I owned was the one where Goku dies at the Cell Games. Yeah. Which is a really good volume.
Uh-huh.
And I just watched that set of episodes. It was 4 episodes over and over in English and Japanese. And I just gradually realized, like, oh, this is way better in Japanese. So, yeah. Anyway, that's kind of off topic. But yes, movie 9 is the shit. It's great.
Yeah, fucking awesome.
Yeah. And I do like movie 2 and 3 are both a little long in the tooth. But they're really good. Movie 3, which is Tree of Might, has all the stuff with all the Earth-based heroes, and they get to use their cool moves. I think it's where the Sokidan, which is Yamcha's cool move, comes from filler, but it's never really used again in the show, but it is used in the Tree of Might movie, and that's really fun. And Turles is a great villain, because it's Masako Nozawa doing Evil Goku.
Yes, just Evil Goku. Evil Goku's always good, as we now know.
And it's the sexiest Evil Goku. It's the one where she's doing the most, like, sultry thing with it.
Yeah, because also, like, Turles has, like, the weird, like, he's, like, Goku right after Goku woke up, because it's like he's got like weird Goku bedhead, which probably doesn't make sense unless you're looking at the character design, because Goku always looks like he has bedhead, but it's like he's like Turles' hair is just a little bit less
and
put together.
And the existence of Turles allows for the best piece of DBZ headcanon I have, which is that we've talked before, Sean, about why the hell isn't Raditz voiced by Masako Nozawa, when it is just canon that Masako Nozawa voices every male member of the Son family.
Yeah, Raditz is the only exception.
Yes. I just think Raditz and Turles, they look the same age, they were mixed up at birth, they were put in the wrong cradle, and that's how it happened, and Turles is Goku's actual brother. That just makes so much, it fixes so many things in the anime for me. Yeah, so there you go. That's the thing. I love the Dragon Ball Z movies in general. They're a lot of fun. The Broly movies are the fucking nadir of it.
Yeah, it's so ironic that when we have the opportunity to do the Dragon Ball Z movie podcast, that it has to be centered around the Broly stuff, because they are like the movies I least want to go back to.
And yet, why are we so excited for the new one, Sean?
Because it looks so fucking good, and it's like, maybe we can take this, maybe like I can get a piece of this hot Broly love that everybody else has been feeling for so long. You know, like, I've always been jealous in my own weird way of, like, there's this cool piece of Dragon Ball that all these other people love to death that I'm so, have always been very ambivalent about. And now it's like, maybe I can like Broly too. Maybe my heart can be filled with some hot Kakaroto!
Yes. Which I don't know if he'll even say in this one.
Yeah,
I'm very curious how they're going to characterize him. The character design, you can already tell, is very different. I'm very excited to see that. You know, we've got our new animation supervisor on this movie. I forget his name. Something Shintani, I think. And he has clearly brought a very new style to the series. Remember, there's only been 3 main character designers in the Dragon Ball anime before. Minoru Maeda, Katsuyoshi Nakatsuru, and Tadayoshi Yamamuro. It's been Yamamuro most recently on Super. And we've got a new guy for the first time in forever. And the new animation style looks so ludicrously gorgeous. I'm so happy we get to see this in a movie theater.
Yep.
I cannot wait. From when you guys are hearing this, it comes out in like 3 days. We are going to see it. We are going to talk about it. I might go see it twice just for the hell of it. I need this in my veins. I cannot wait for Dragon Ball Super Broly. I hope this is a redemption for a character who I don't really care about.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited for it. And then I'm just excited also for what comes after, you know? That's like, we are still on such a hot wave of Dragon Ball love, coming off of the end of Super and going into this movie, that I'm curious to see what lies beyond Dragon Ball Super Broly.
Maybe a new Broly trilogy.
Who knows? Yeah, Dragon Ball Super Broly, the second coming, maybe again.
Maybe the next movie, Sean, will be like, Toriyama will be like, well, I took all this stuff that didn't work in the anime and I made it work here. My next challenge, I'm going to do Bio Broly again.
We can only hope.